This is the Quality News Network. A poll released today by CNN says a narrow majority of the country wants a timetable for troops to come home from Iraq. 47% of those polled say the troop withdrawal should begin within a year or less. However, the U.S. House today rejected a timetable to withdraw U.S. troops. The vote on the non-binding resolution followed heated partisan debate. The Senate rejected a similar measure yesterday. At the White House, President Bush signed the $94.5 billion emergency spending bill. The majority of the money will fund U.S. war efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. A U.S. soldier was killed and two are missing following an attack at a checkpoint southwest of Baghdad today. At least 13 worshippers were killed earlier by a suicide shoe bomber inside a Shia mosque. Several dozen people were injured. Iraq's deputy justice minister is asking the U.S. to suspend plans to transfer prisons and detainees into Iraqi control. There is concern that Shia militia have overrun the prison system. There are reports of Shia freeing fellow militia members and executing Sunni Arabs. In Washington, the investigation into whether U.S. Marines killed Iraqi civilians in Haditha last November has been completed. There's also a second investigation underway to decide whether criminal charges should be filed. A Washington, D.C. grand jury agreed not to indict Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. She was accused of assaulting a Capitol Hill policeman in an altercation earlier this year. Also on Capitol Hill, the House voted unanimously to remove Louisiana Congressman William Jefferson from the Ways and Means Committee. Jefferson is the target of an FBI bribery investigation. The Homeland Security Department warns that most U.S. citizens and states are still unprepared for catastrophes, be they natural or man-made. The agency reports across the country local plans for disasters are out of date and uncoordinated. In New Mexico, thousands of people have been evacuated in front of a wildfire in the Gila National Forest. Started by a lightning strike, the fire has scorched more than 7,000 acres. Avian flu has been found in the eastern Canadian province of Prince Edward Island. The diseased gosling was found in a small poultry flock in a residential backyard. Authorities are investigating. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network-quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
Delta Airlines wants to opt out of its pension plan for its pilots. The bankrupt airline says its near-term cost for retiring pilots exceeds $1 billion. 6,000 pilots work for Delta. The chairman of the Federal Oversight Committee says Fannie Mae's $11 billion in accounting errors cost shareholders up to $30 billion, and that it will be many years before Fannie Mae has proper financial controls in place. According to reports, there's a worldwide glut of natural gas supplies. A warm winter is credited for building up inventories of natural gas. Microsoft founder Bill Gates announced he plans to give up the daily running of Microsoft by July 2008. The world's richest man says he wants to concentrate on his charitable foundation's work. Apple Computer is investigating allegations regarding poor working conditions in its Chinese iPod manufacturing plant. A British newspaper alleges Apple's factory workers there make as little as $50 a month for 15-hour-a-day working conditions. Light sweet crude ended trading at $69.88 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 1 point at 11,015. The NASDAQ down 14 at 2130. The S&P 500 down 5 at 1252. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I loathe Friday. I dread them. Friday sucks. Yeah, it does. And you know why. Because this is Bob Shuts Up for 2 days day. And trust me, I don't handle that very well. But at any rate, we've got 3 hours of good conversation before us this evening. And I hope, I sincerely hope that we can make the very best of it. Because, well, it even though there's 2 days of silence, it does help me a lot. Hope it does you as well. And, you know, my what I like to do with Fridays, unless there's something really, really, really out there jumping all over the threat board. You can't let them in here. They'll see the big board. To go over things that maybe we would have missed in the last few days. And of course, this being conversation radio, anything you want to bring along is entirely up to you. You got one, you got a story out there that you want to share with other people that's chewing a hole in your soul? Bring it on. Oh no, I almost said bring it on. Bad, bad Bob, bad host, bad. Wonderful 4 hours of radio preceding the beginning of this program. We really got something cooking here with the Head On Radio Network, don't we? Guy James, Bruce Birch, couldn't ask for any better. And of course, tomorrow evening, beginning at 8 p.m., we get the Cup of Joe program with our good friend in Atlanta, Joe Vecchio, followed by Fourth Estate Radio. When our good friends Bruce Birch and John Fox join together for a good look backward at what's gone on in the week and have a hell of a good time doing it. Trust me, if you're on the East Coast, it's worth staying up for. If you're on the West Coast, it's worth being around for. If you podcast or listen to it on the archives, well worth your time. All of the programming on the Head On Radio Network. So, you know, that's what we can look forward to. And the new schedule on Sundays, now that Bruce has gone to a five-day-a-week show, we're looking at a situation in that everybody needs a day off. So, Sunday, bupkis. Because Agnes, God knows, Agnes needs a day off. Do you realize that wonderful woman has not had a day to herself since Easter? Easter. So, Sundays, yeah, day of rest. Okay, good. Where to start this evening? There's a million places, but of course, I should start with a little bit of candor and honesty, I suppose, because it turns out that the guest that was scheduled to be here this evening, well, not here, but you get the idea, Bruce Fine, I got a call at the beginning of Bruce Birch's show. I'm Bruce Poor, you see. But at any rate, Bruce Fine was on a plane or some such. So he will be rescheduled into next week, I'm told. So I'll try to give you as much advance warning of that as possible so that you can be ready to join in. And like I said, if you want to send in your questions for Bruce Fine, that gives you a little bit more opportunity. Okay? But I hope he will, in fact, be here. No, tonight, let's see. There's a story out there right now, and it has to do with a Muslim cleric who wants to convert. I know. Who wants to convert Australian Prime Minister John Howard and George W. Bush to Islam. Silly, silly, silly cleric. Militant cleric Abu Bakar Bashir called on John Howard and George Bush to convert to Islam, saying it was, quote, the only way to save their souls. Poor, silly, silly, silly cleric Abu Bakar Bashir. Those men don't have souls. Those men are demons. You don't want to convert demons to your faith. Bashir was released from prison on Wednesday after completing a 26-month sentence in Indonesia for conspiracy in the Bali bombings. 202 people died in that. And he spoke at a hardline Islamic boarding school. Boarding school? Hardline? Not a good combination. That is a spawning ground for supposed Muslim terrorists. He said, he called on people to, he said, why use bombs in a non-conflict zone? Preaching is enough. Talking about bombings in Indonesia. But he wants to convert, oh Lord God, Billy Bob, he wants to convert John Howard and George Bush. Can you pick? See, I read this story, and it sort of made my little head hurt. Can you see George Bush all decked out for going to prayers, the flowing robes, the magnificence, bowing on a mat to pray? This man doesn't pray. I mean, I take some grief for calling the religion industry on the carpet. I've got more faith than George Bush has. I've got, and many of you as well, more realistic faith than George Bush will ever have. George Bush worships a God who his God thinks it's okay to slaughter civilians for the hell of it. Oh, poor, silly, silly, silly Abu Bakar Bashir. It must have... Those 26 months in that Indonesian prison must have, messed with the cabbage a little bit. Howard sent a strongly worded letter to the Indonesian president on Thursday expressing distress over Bashir's release and urging the government to monitor the cleric's activities because of his links to the Bali bombings, which killed 88 Australians. That didn't play so well with Bashir. He said, I don't interfere in Australian affairs, and you should not interfere in ours. Let's see, he called George Bush an infidel. And he said he was happy the American people were starting to realize that George Bush was a screw-up in waging a war on Muslim people. This is the best quote from him. I feel sorry for the American people, but it seems now they realize he was wrong. Yeah, 26 months in an Indonesian prison will rot your brain. Convert to Islam. George Bush. Gee whiz, Mr. Bashir, he can't even read English, and he's going to learn to read Arabic so he can read the Quran? It ain't going to happen. It is simply not going to happen. Right? Yeah. Listen, a quick little advisory. You know how I said that Agnes hadn't had a day off since God was a toddler? She's got the night off tonight. So, as you can well understand, that puts me behind the production facility. And as such, when the phone rings, well, this is just how it has to be. When the phone rings, I'm just going to put it on hold, and either at a break or if it's in the middle, I'll just go straight, and we'll find out who's on the phone. You'll find out at the same time I do. Okay? Hope that's okay by you. And, of course, you know the phone number. The phone number, of course, is 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. We'll do a break, and we will be right back. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Fight childhood asthma, then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, You can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org. The first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
He's a man who just loves conservatives. Baked, broiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Up all night.
All right. Welcome back. I'm Bob. It is, I'm a little out of practice. Yeah, leave the speakers on. Listen to the feedback, Bob. It's Friday. And you've got a couple of chances to get your thoughts out on Saturday evening. But this is your last chance before the weekend really gets up on top of us. So, by all means, make use of the phones. 877-4 head on 877-443-2366. Right now we are joined by our good friend Joe Vecchio, calling in live from Hotlanta, Georgia. And maybe a little bit of breaking news. You with us there, Joe?
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
I'm fine. I'm glad that you gave Agnes a night off there because, you know, she really works hard, and I really appreciate everything that she does for it. And everybody should have some time off every now and then.
Isn't that the truth?
Before I get to the news that I wanted to bring up, I did want to apologize to everybody for not having very many Cup of Joe reports. For the last couple of weeks, really, there's only, I think, been one or two. And a big reason for that is I'm getting ready for this move. For those of you who haven't listened to my show or haven't read my blog, I'm going to be moving to Chicago. Actually, now it's early July, not the end of June. But I'm leaving Atlanta for Chicago, hopefully for better job prospects there and things like that, until, of course, Head On gets going full. And so I wanted to apologize to everybody for that. I mean, it's my duty to do those things, but I don't always have the time between the move. And I'm also helping out on a local political campaign, putting my money where my mouth is, as it were. Because, you know, I talk about politics and I comment on it, just like all of us do. But I also like to get active and involved. And because I really don't have a ton of experience, I'm at a pretty low level, stuffing envelopes, that sort of thing.
Hey, the envelopes need stuff, Joe.
That's right. It's stuff that needs to be done, and I'm learning the ropes. And hopefully when I get to Chicago, I'll learn how their machine runs out there. That ought to be an interesting education.
That's masterclass work when you get to Chicago.
Right. We got breaking news here in Atlanta that, as you recall, it was way back in May that Cynthia McKinney was put up on charges for, you know, supposedly hitting a Capitol Hill policeman.
Right.
And they sent the case to a grand jury, and the grand jury announced just a little while ago that they're not going to do anything with it. It's going to drop it. So McKinney's off the hook.
Good.
Although, you know, there really wasn't anything to it anyway. It's just a nice... you take your victories where you get them, you know?
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I'm glad for that because, as you know, Cynthia McKinney is actually my congresswoman.
Right.
And I have had some dealings, not with her, but with some of her people, her communications director, fighting for election reform causes. She gave a great speech, by the way, when they had that whole Iraq debacle yesterday,
mm-hmm.
that whole big publicity stunt that the Republicans put so they can make a lot of noise about, you know, we got to see this thing through when, of course, none of them are actually doing anything. And McKinney said, you know, here we are talking about this, and meanwhile, you know, the soldiers don't have enough, you know, equipment to do their job, and they're busy taking away soldiers' health care. And she was only allowed 1 minute to speak.
Well, you know, you can't let her get all the ideas out. Then the Republicans will have to explain things.
Well, you can't let the uppity ones get in
touch with it. See, I was trying not to, Joe.
I didn't say the N word.
I'm proud of you.
But you know exactly what I'm doing because you know with Cynthia, it's not just a matter of her being black, but she's loud and nobody likes the uppity ones. You know, not the white power structure.
Oh no.
They don't like it when people speak up for their rights. So, but I love what you said just earlier about the guy trying to get Bush to convert to Islam. That was, and you know, said, "Why do you want? He has no soul." I wasn't expecting you to say that. That was a good one. And that's pretty much about right. And
well, you know, what do you want from an administration where the vice president looks in a mirror and doesn't see anything, Joe?
God almighty. If these people are incredible. Yeah, and I wonder sometimes how they sleep at night and how they live with themselves, just knowing what they're doing. And, you know, these are the ones that believe in a judgment after death, especially Bush, or at least that's what he says openly. And you wonder if he thinks he can fool either Jesus or God or whoever does whatever kind of punishment or judgment after death. I mean, I know I'm screwed up. I know how screwed up I am. I'm not claiming to be perfect. Nobody's perfect. But I can look myself in the mirror and say, well, you know, I screwed up here, but it was an honest mistake. It wasn't just something I was doing and just something I was BSing people just for the sake of saying stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and how these people live with themselves day in and day out is really beyond me. And, you know, I used to try to concern myself with why do they think that way, but then I just said, look, let's get them the heck out of office first, and then we'll do the psychoanalysis later.
Emphasis on the word psycho.
Exactly. You know, and just get them out of power and keep them from controlling our lives, and they're welcome to whatever psychosis they want to have after that. But that's really, you know, that's really the nature of the fight right now. Get them out of power, and then, you know, then the real work begins. And sadly enough, getting them out of power is the easy part, because once that's done, you've got to rebuild a society. And you've got to try to rebuild a decent moral society, which is not going to happen very easily.
No, it's not. Joe, there is so very, very much work to be done in this country right now. That it's daunting if you sit there and you think about it just a whole bunch, because it'll kind of chew you up and spit you out, and it'll depress you.
Well, I think we've reached a point where we have to look at. I hear a lot of people talking about the 2006 elections and this and that and this and that, and I keep thinking this is more about 06. We have to concentrated in elections well into the future, and it might have gotten to the point, it probably has gotten to the point, where guys like me who are, like, you know, 44, 45 years old, we might not be able to see the actual change that needs to get done in our lifetime, and that it's going to take that long a dedication for people working all that time in order to fix things now, because it's gotten so bad. Because, you know, once these people with power, once they get more of it, you don't get it back from them very easily. You got to pry it from their cold, dead hands, practically.
Yeah, you really do. I mean, this is a labor. Well, I remember when they came out when they started the Iraq War, and then, oh yeah, this is a war for generations. This what we're doing, Joe, is a labor for generations.
Right.
This is the stuff where, you know, it's the whole Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, and teach the children well, and Buffalo Springfield, whatever. We've got those of us who are committed to this kind of change. We have absolutely got to start with the cradle.
And I think a lot of the problems we're having now really had their origins in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, where the parents failed to pass on the necessities, the things that need to get done to their children. A lot of them just worried about their own material concerns, keeping up with the Joneses, that sort of thing. And, you know, now we have to learn that lesson again. And we have to succeed, because if we fail, then the task of the generation that follows us becomes even harder.
Yeah.
Even more difficult.
And less likely to succeed. I mean, we have to face facts.
Exactly. And, you know, the problem I have with the movement right now is that a lot of people, especially out there in the blogosphere, they just assume that because there's a lot of us squawking back and forth at each other and to each other, and, you know, donating money to candidates, that this represents a movement. It doesn't. We're still in the embryonic stages with this. And a lot of people don't recognize that because they deal with it on an everyday basis. But if you look at it from a long point of view, we're not focused. We're not really very well organized. We're doing some good things with candidates. I'm very happy with what's going on with Ned Lamont in Connecticut. But it won't mean a thing if he doesn't actually win that Senate seat. That would be a huge accomplishment for us.
Well, yeah, and the other thing I'd like for us to, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe this is just me feeling this way, I would like for us as Democrats to pay a little bit more attention to our primary process,
mm-hmm.
because that is, you know, that's where the change comes, and we are, I'm as guilty of it as the next guy. We are obsessed with the next presidential election. We're slowly turning our focus to November, where it should be in the first place. But it's our primary processes. I had a couple of protest votes I wanted to cast in West Virginia's primary, but I didn't have a protest candidate to cast it for.
Right. Well, you know, we have what I'm working on now is a primary runoff, and basically it's really kind of stupid. It's one of those cases where Democrats are eating each other. We have an incumbent in office, a Democratic incumbent, and I'm not going to give the name, but it's a person who's been a state representative here for about 6 years, done a very, very good job for the District 86 here in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And this person has done a very, very good job, and there's absolutely no reason to have a Democratic opponent in the primaries. It's a very, very blue district. Doesn't even have an opponent in the general election, so the primary is basically the election.
Right.
But there's no reason for the Democrats to put up another opponent. And here we have this one person who basically has got it into their head to just run for office to put on their resume or for whatever reason. There's no purpose behind it. It's not as if this person has been doing a bad job as the incumbent, which hasn't been the case, been doing a very, very good job for the district, or that one particular single issue that, you know, this person's going the wrong way on. And that's not the case. So we have somebody who's just running for the sake of their own ego, and that's just wrong. And there's no reason for it, and those that are in power in the Democratic Party ought to be putting a stop to it, but they're not. They ought to go to this person and say, wait until this person moves on or retires, then you can run for the seat and just have it. But that's not what's happening. And that's part of the problem I see with the Democratic leadership, is that they're not doing these sort of things. They're not really a machine yet as far as that's concerned. And a lot of them are just more interested in keeping their own positions than they are in fighting the battles that need to be fought. That's as I see it.
Well, yeah, there are vanity campaigns. There are campaigns that are ego-driven. It's been my experience with the Democratic Party in general that during the primary process, your state and your local boards, we'll say, well, you know, we're not going to take a position on any candidates in the primary. After the primary, we'll get behind whoever wins the primary. But the exact obverse of that, Joe, is to try to make sure that in the primary process, that all are represented. I mean, was this an ugly campaign, or is it just a matter of pure ego?
It's a matter of pure ego, but it gets a little ugly. I mean, the opponent is doing things like stealing signs,
stuff
like that, and that's just meaningless, pointless stuff. And I agree. And actually, I agree with the process that the local party shouldn't officially take a stand, at least publicly. But behind the scenes, they ought to be looking at and saying, you know, going to this person saying, "What the heck are you doing? There's no purpose for this," and putting pressure on them to knock it off, or they're not going to get any support from local Democrats, you know, people in charge of the party in the area.
Well, did the challenger garner more votes? No.
The election is not until July 18th.
But it's a runoff.
It's not a runoff. It's the regular primary election.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I misunderstood.
This person really, from the canvas thing I've been doing, the opponent does not have a serious chance, because every neighborhood we've gone to, the incumbent is very well known. And if there's a negative, it's only from people who aren't really participating or voting in the election to begin with. But everybody that we've talked to who's a registered voter knows who the incumbent is and is planning on voting for that person. So, and that's a good sign, but it just annoys me that it has to be done at all, because it's a waste of money and it's a waste of effort, because the candidate could be out, you know, doing her job as a representative, as a state representative.
Right.
So, and like I said, the local Democratic Party for DeKalb County, Georgia, as a matter of fact, and I do some work for them as well, their leadership ought to, you know, take a hand and say, you know, knock it off. There's no reason for this. We've got a good seat. We've got a good incumbent. It's a very solid seat. There's no reason to divide us at all in this fashion. And you know, it's quite possible, knowing some of the leadership of the DeKalb Democratic Party here, that they might have put this person up to running themselves.
Well, or some well-placed Republican. We've had that happen here a number of times in West Virginia, Joe, where the Republican Party will pick a candidate.
Right. And, you know, we have open primaries here in Georgia, which means that Cynthia McKinney's seat is once again in danger, because the Republicans can cross over vote. That's how Denise Majette got in
right
last time. And it's funny because Denise Majette is running for school superintendent now, which is like a real step down from congresswoman.
Yeah, a little bit.
And you know, you wonder and you look at her and you think, how could she have been so stupid? I mean, she could have at least hung on to the congresswoman seat for another few more years and then maybe try to Senate run. But even so, you know, rural Georgians are not going to vote for a black woman for anything.
No, and as much as it grieves me to say so, Joe, no more than rural Southerners in general are going to vote for Russ Feingold.
That's right. Or anybody from the Northeast. When was the last time we had a presidential candidate that was not from the South? I like to think it was Ronald Reagan. And even though he was a Republican, he played that whole Wild West thing. But, you know, you look at the last three Democratic presidents have all been Southerners: Clinton, Carter, and Johnson.
Yeah.
And you know, then Northerners will vote for Southern candidates. They voted for Clinton very well. Hell, they elected, you know, Hillary Clinton senator.
Yeah.
And they voted for Jimmy Carter, and they voted for Bill Clinton, and they voted for Lyndon Johnson, if I remember my electoral map from those years correctly. But you couldn't get anybody from down, at least I don't want to say anybody, but you couldn't get enough people from down here, down in the South, to vote for any candidate from the North. They simply won't do it. And that's...
Well, I think maybe that's a function of putting up the wrong candidates. I mean, let's deal with it. I think it was a profound... As a Southerner myself, I found it profoundly insulting to watch the Democratic Party... well, not necessarily the party, but the Kerry machine just conceded the Southern states.
Yep.
And I very much admire Howard Dean for coming out and saying, we ain't conceding nothing.
Right, the 50-state strategy, and I agree wholeheartedly with that. And I think that's the best thing going on for the Democratic Party right now. And all I hear from people right now is 06, 06, 06, and I keep trying to tell them, so look, it's about building a foundation. You know, yeah, fight for 06, but you know what? Don't make it such a huge thing that if and when we fail, and I'll tell you something, we're still not going to win back the House or the Senate in 06. I'm predicting that. I predicted it on my show. I'm predicting it now.
I really want you to be wrong on that one, Joe.
I want to be wrong, too. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, don't make me think, don't make it seem like, you know, I want us to lose, but I look at the gerrymandering. I look at the lack of real enthusiasm among the Democratic base. And I look at, you know, the amount of election fraud that's going on.
The god-awful machines.
Sure. And look what happened with California and Busby. I mean, Brad Blog and
that
Mark
Christensen. That blows my mind.
And again, every time we talk about it, you know, it's like, well, it's past now. So when is the time to talk about it? I mean, this only just happened a couple of weeks ago. And if you don't...
They sent the damn machines home with the... My God, the Diebold machines were locked up in garages and sitting in the backs of cars and...
And you know what? In 2008, it's going to happen all over California because they're fighting to put those machines all throughout the state. Once they got rid of that California Secretary of State, as nutty as he was dead set against those machines. And now that they're going to try anyway to get those machines all over the state. And you know what? The next one, instead of Florida and Ohio, the next one's going to be California. And that's my prediction. That's my big prediction for 08, that California will go to the Republicans' way because of the machines. And until we stop pussyfooting around on this issue, that's going to continue to happen.
Yeah, I've been looking at some of the litigation and such. I've been wondering, you say California. Joe, I wonder if perhaps it might be Pennsylvania.
Could be, too. Anywhere where they got the machines is suspect. And they really, you know, and I think they would love to go to California just to make that kind of a huge statement from a state that at one point tried to ban the Diebold machines to having the Diebold machines come in and just vote Republican all the way through. I think they would do it just to, you know, just to make the point.
Well, you know, when Guy and Bruce were up in D.C., Joe, they both had conversations with Clint Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
And you're familiar with Clint, aren't you?
A little bit.
Yeah, he literally wrote the programming at the behest of Tom Feeney, who's now in Congress, but at the time was Speaker of the Florida House. And for Wang Enterprises, he wrote the program that flipped the votes on the Diebold machines without any sort of, without any way to track it being done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this he's out there, he's running against Feeney for Congress, and Feeney just, well, I'm not talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the data, where's Nightline? Where's, well, we know the story.
We know the story with those guys. And you know, I talked to 2 weeks ago, I had Sham Reddy on my show, who is one of the candidates for Georgia's Secretary of the State. And Georgia was, I think, the second state to have Diebold machines throughout the entire state.
Yeah.
And I asked him about that, and he was still, you know, he's still talking about paper trails. And he's a nice enough guy, but there doesn't seem to be anybody with the courage to just get up and say, get rid of the machines completely. Because that's what I just asked him straight out. I said, can't we just ditch the damn machines? Can't we just toss them in the trash and, you know, go back to a paper ballot system where you count the ballots by hand and you count them in the precincts and then you report your findings and you move on to the next day? And it's all, it can all get done in one night. And nobody seems to want to do that. And, you know, I'm worried we're at the point in this country where we've just basically given up on democracy. We've just simply decided we don't want all the hassle. We don't want all the, let's just put in.
Well, Joe, you there's plenty of reason to wonder that, and I'm not trying to negative things up. But last night I spent a great deal of time talking about the Supreme Court case that came down yesterday that said that when the cops have a search warrant, they don't have to knock anymore.
Right, that was a biggie. And then they just passed something too recently where they were trying to get something passed where they said you don't it's perfectly all right if you shoot somebody who's just breaking into your house, it's perfectly all right to do that. You're within your legal rights.
Well, those are generally individual state issues, but I know statistics are beginning to come out about Florida's shoot in the name of fear law, and I think there have been 13 fear killings now. You know, you've got the right to shoot somebody now if in Florida if you're just, you know, if they make you nervous.
Right.
The 13 people have been shot. Not one of those people was armed.
So if it's okay, so if a cop comes with a warrant and just bashes the door in and a guy shoots him dead, is it coming in? Do you charge that guy with a killing cop crime?
Well, you know, the guy's not going to survive to see the charges.
That's probably true.
These idiots, these five hopeless fascists on the Supreme Court, Joe, damn.
And how hard did we fight to keep them off the bench? How hard did Democrats?
Oh, no, believe me, I was all over it last night. Yeah. I believe Samuel Alito will be he's a good American and he's dedicated to the principles of freedom of religion.
Now, it's quite possible that if they had, you know, really, really fought, they still might not have won anyway, but at least they could have shown a little friggin' backbone. And, you know, if the people who had voted against him in the actual vote had voted to, you know, like you said that one time we had to talk about it, if they had voted for cloture, or to end, not for cloture, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then the guy never would have gotten on in the first place. You can have a filibuster if everybody was organized, if everybody was together and said, we're not voting for this guy. If you want to do it, you're going to do it the illegal way by a recess appointment or whatever the heck you're going to try, or the nuclear option. That's the only way you're going to do it with us in power. Over our dead bodies, basically, it would have to be.
And we've never called them on it to this day.
Nope, we haven't. And you know, and that's another reason, you know, when I talk about how things aren't going to get better, I mean, even if by some miracle, and I say it's going to take a miracle for us to take back the House and or the Senate in 06, I don't think our leadership has the courage to do what needs to be done. I honestly don't.
Well, it's not, you know, the instant gratification thing has got to end, Joe. I'm more optimistic than you. I think things can change if people want it to change. But it's the want to factor.
Well, I'm an optimistic person, but I'm long term optimistic. I'm just looking at realistically, you know, this is what we need to do in order to get to this certain point, and nobody seems to be doing that. And, you know, things are going to change sooner or later because, you know, people like the Republicans, they're going to overstretch sooner or later. I mean, I thought they would have overstretched 5 years ago myself. I thought they overstretched with the election thing. But, hey, you know, they've gotten away with so much now that it doesn't give me a whole lot of confidence that they're going to be held accountable in the future.
Well, the other side of this is also the fact that this is, like I said, this is a labor for generations. This is where it starts. 06 is where it starts. Getting rid of Tom DeLay was a huge, huge bit of success because that man was entrenched for life if he wanted to be, and he was run out of office because he was so filthy, dirty. It's a start. One at a time, you know, one at a time.
And that's what I have to kind of keep telling people. But everybody, you know, I can predict what's going to happen. Everybody's going to get so crazy about 06, 06, 06. And then if we lose 06, 06, 06, then we're going to, you know, we're going to sit this, oh, what did we do wrong? We did this, we did this. And I'm trying, I keep trying to tell you, you didn't do anything wrong. You're fighting for the right thing, but you're only looking short term. You have to look at 2006. You have to look at 8. You have to look at 10. You have to look at 12, 14. And Marcos did from the Daily Coast when he was here in Atlanta. He said the same thing himself. He said, never mind 2006. Think of 2016. That's what you ought to be thinking about. And that's what he, and he's right. You have to think long term. And you have to do both.
We get a, we get away from the culture of instant gratification, Joe. We've got to do that.
Right.
We can't lay down and put on the sackcloth and ashes if everything doesn't go our way. I think we can take back the House. I'm a little more pessimistic about the Senate.
Well, it's going to be one of those things where we'll have to see in 2006. I mean, I've been. You know, I hate to say it that way, but I've been right for a long time as far as these issues are concerned.
Yeah, for me, at this point in time, voting for Robert Byrd is going to hang in my craw like a bone in my throat. But I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it because I want that seat, and when that man goes to meet his maker, I want to make sure that a Democrat is appointed to fill it.
Right. And you know, we got to stop doing things like, I don't know if you read BartCop.com.
Right? Oh, yeah, I'm a regular BartCop guy.
And he's been yelling at Daily Coast because, you know, Marcos has a poll up about, you know, who are you going to pick for president in 08. And,
Hillary's at zero.
Yeah, Hillary's at zero. And BartCop is complaining because BartCop has been saying that Hillary's the one that has the best chance to win. And he's making a huge case over it. It's like, you don't have to make a huge case over it, man. You know, you're misinterpreting. I mean, he's expecting Marcos from Daily Coast to go in there and just slam down his readers for participating in a poll that he put up.
Yeah, non-scientific to boot.
Right. Mm. And, you know, Marcos isn't making any claims, but BartCop's contention is, oh, you know, he's had it up there for a long time and he never makes any comments about it, blah, blah, blah. But that's not the point. The point is, you know, there's no reason to be starting these little peeing contests. Back and forth, it doesn't do any good.
No, oh, bless his heart. I love Bart to death, and I
love him too. But he's got that temper of his, and
it's like on the Beverly Hillbillies. Granny used to say, you know, that Jed Clampett's a smart man, but when it comes to Indians, he's got a blind spot.
That's pretty much right.
You know, Bart's got a blind spot about Hillary.
And I don't have anything against Hillary. I mean, I don't disagree with him. It's just that, you know, he continues to keep making a case about it, and there's really. You know, it's really nothing that needs to be pointed out on a daily basis like that. So.
Well, I mean, for me, Hillary has to get reelected first to her Senate seat.
I think that's pretty possible.
I think that's going to happen, but still, that's 06. I'm not a Republican, Joe. I'm not into coronations.
Right.
You know, I want a primary process.
And
I'm frustrated. I'm frustrated by the primary process. I wish I was seeing more discussion within the ranks of the Democratic parties of the several states about what we do to level the playing field. I mean, I've got good friends from Iowa. I love Iowans. I've got friends from New Hampshire. Fine state, the Granite State. But I'm not up for letting them pick my nominee.
Right.
You know, by the time the 04 primary rolled around in West Virginia, May, it's not that late. In May, John Kerry was the presumptive nominee, and he wasn't my candidate. He wasn't my guy.
Right.
And I went and I cast my Kucinich vote. But it was, you know, it was a runaway train. And frankly, that's bad for our party, because that's not where our party is. Our party is about choosing candidates who best represent the party, and not choosing candidates who best represent the ability to raise funds.
Right. And you know something, though? I think the good thing that came out of that is that Howard Dean is, I think, in the best position he could possibly be in right now. He's actually in a better position than he would have been if he had been the candidate, and even if he had won as president. Because if he had gotten in as president, then, you know, his party would be betraying him. You know, the Republicans would be all over him from day one.
Oh, yeah.
So... he's actually in a better position to be working behind the scenes and doing what needs to be done right now. Although I would have loved to have seen him as president. I think the world of Governor Dean, because he has practical experience. I like Dennis Kucinich, too, and there were some people who were trying to get me to be a Kucinich voter. And I said, look, it has nothing to do with whether or not I agree or disagree with his positions, and I happen to agree with pretty much all of them. But it's a question of, you know, what kind of experience does he have to be a president, which is different from being a congressman. And that's why I like Governor Dean, because he had been a governor, which is the closest thing you can get to being a president in this country. And that's, you know, and that's a real honest thing. I mean, it's not a personal thing against Kucinich, who I happen to like, and it's not a love of Howard Dean as a person. It's just understanding that you have to have not only the ideas, but you have to have the knowledge to do what needs to be done. So, you know, that's just the way it goes. And you and I can look at that difference and say, this is just a good, strong difference of opinion that makes our party stronger. Or you can be like, you know, Bartkop, and it's really Bartkop, because Daily Coast, Marcos isn't even paying any attention to what Bartkop is saying, I don't think. Or you can try to be destructive about it. There's good ways of handling it and bad ways of handling it, and this is a good way of handling it.
Well, you know, when 08 does come around, if Feingold runs, I'll support Feingold. If Gore runs, I will support Gore in the primary processes. I've got a short list of people I wouldn't touch with a 20-foot battle lance. The John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
You get one chance and then you move on. And Joe Lieberman. Joe Biden.
No.
You know, I mean, just. And I will not support Hillary in the primaries.
There are really only three. Those two. You named two of them. There's really only three people that I would wholeheartedly support in the primaries, and that's Gore, and that's Feingold, and that's Wes Clark.
Wesley Clark.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people think he's too centrist, but I've heard the man speak. I think there's a lot to be said for Mark Warner.
Okay, yeah, I haven't heard that much about him, but I can look into him too. But I agree with you. Hillary is definitely out. Kerry is definitely out. Lieberman is might as well. You know, as far as I'm concerned, we should forcibly remove him from the Democratic Party.
Yeah, some sort of an exorcism, or
make a ceremony out of it. Here's your Joe Mandem right here. I got your Joe Mandem right here, buddy.
Rip the buttons off. Send him out the fortress gates. Break the sword.
Smack them with a glove a couple of times, whatever the heck they do in those ceremonies. Just get them out. You're not a Democrat.
Thou art anathema.
That's right. And the same with Biden. And somebody put Chuck Schumer in a cage, please.
With a muzzle?
Yeah, please. You're only making things worse, Chuck. And, you know, you ought to know better. You're a senator from New York, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I think of Patrick Moynihan, people like that. It's like, oh, poor New York. New Yorkers I talk to, Hillary's done a decent job for them.
She's a good senator, and I like her as a senator, and she's a smart politician.
Well, when she's not supporting illegal wars.
Right. But she talks about, she still has a real problem in that area, and a lot of progressives don't really like that. I mean, there was that whole big thing that the Republicans were claiming that Democrats were booing the soldiers, whereas what they were really booing was Hillary, talking about the long slog and stuff like that. And, a lot of progressives don't want to hear that. A lot of progressives want to hear, we want the troops home now.
Yeah, short slog in the direction of home.
Right, exactly. And Hillary wasn't going along with that, and then they let her know about it. And, of course, the right wing, as always, lies and makes it sound like that we were booing the troops, which, of course, we're not.
No, that's hooey.
I spoke about that Iraq debacle yesterday, and it's just like, I can't believe here's Dennis Hastert, who didn't he get deferments? Didn't he get out of the war? Was he an actual veteran?
I don't think so.
But I don't think any of these guys are actual veterans. And then the ones who are veterans are the ones who are talking about, let's have a sensible plan for this. And the Republicans don't. And all they want to do is sit there and grandstand and pretend like, because they're waving the biggest flag, they're the most patriotic.
Oh, this thing in the House of Representatives just made me sick today.
You want to be able to get a bag of tomatoes and just start going there and throwing them at them.
Yeah, and the bananas and the really slimy rotten lettuce. Yeah,
exactly.
But that's what you get with the Republican Congress, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the barn is on fire. And they're baling hay. Whether it's the Senate with its the gay marriage stupidity. We stopped the estate tax stupidity, the Paris Hilton tax.
For now.
For now.
And what gets me is that poor people fall for this. The estate tax is a perfect example. You have to leave somebody, what is it, $1.3 million?
Yeah.
Before that even begins to get taxed. And how many people is that affecting?
Not a bunch. It's like the flag burning thing. I mentioned it last night. How are we going to dispose of? I mean, are we going to just make American flag cocktail napkins illegal now?
who was Gary Trudeau years ago in Doonesbury, and this has been going on for years, and this is like 15, 20 years ago. What Doonesbury did in a Sunday strip is that he just put a big picture of the flag up in the strip. Well, the whole thing. And a little thing in the corner saying, we would like you to throw this paper out without breaking any of the flag, anti-flag burning or anti-flag desecration, any anti-desecration amendment that's going through Congress right now. So if you throw this out, you would be literally breaking the law, the intent of that law. And, you know, that's a way of doing it. And I always say we should have a protest. We'll get a flag with 12 stripes and 32 stars, just for the sake of it. And we'll burn that. Well, that's not a flag.
No.
Our flag has 13 and 50. This one has 12 and 32. That's not a flag.
That's a good thought. That's a very good thought.
You know? And another thing is you can hold a press conference that you were going to announce that you were going to have a flag-burning ceremony, and then you turn around and you burn a Nazi flag, and you burn an Imperial Japanese flag, and you burn a Confederate flag, although down here you wouldn't do that. But, you're trying to make a statement where you're against fascism and you're against totalitarianism, you know. And, that's an interesting way of doing it. But, you know, I come up with all these ideas and I never do them, so I'm a wussy in that sense. I'm such a wussy.
Well, you don't have a staff.
I don't have a staff.
You need a staff.
And hopefully that'll happen for me once I get up to Chicago. I'll be a little closer to our friend from the White Rose Society up there.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to moving to a real city. I love Atlanta. There's a lot of things to like about Atlanta. We've got some wonderful things here. But if you don't have a car and you don't have a specific skill to earn a lot of money, you are just screwed in this town. And that's the sad truth of it, because I haven't been able to find any kind of decent work down here. In the 12 years I've been down here, I've never really had a decent job. And maybe in Chicago things will be better, things will be different. You don't need a car up there. I can get on the public transport. And by the way, anybody who wants to help out a little bit can get on my site and hit the donate button, because I can certainly use to go up there with more than $20 in a suitcase. You know what I mean?
Gotta have some traveling cash.
That's how I came up to Atlanta, man. I had $20 in a suitcase, and that's it. And that was it was like 12 years ago. And I haven't gotten much past that since I've been here. I'll be leaving with what I came, basically. So.
Yeah, and a hat full of hope.
And a hat full of hope.
All right, Joe, thanks so much for taking time out to converse with me. Anything special on the plate for tomorrow night?
Hopefully get Mark Crispin-Miller back. He had the flu, apparently, which is what happened last week. He was supposed to be on the show, but he never called in, and I got an email afterwards from his wife saying,
"Oh, bless his heart, my guest for tonight's on an airplane right now." So
yeah, it happens that way. And you know, with your show, you do a daily show, which means you can always get somebody for tomorrow. When I have to get somebody back, I got to wait a whole week. So
yeah.
And listen, I told Agnes, if you ever need a day off yourself, just you know, give me a call or something, and I'll be glad to fill in for you one night of the week. Just you know, if you just need a night off.
All right. Well, thanks, Joe. And boy, I don't know about you, but I hate moving. One move in 5 years equals a house fire.
I hear you, but I'm a military guy. I was kind of used to moving, but I hate it anyway.
Well, best of luck with the boxes.
Oh yeah, most of that's just getting put in storage here or being shipped. My sons are going to put it in their apartment for a while, so I'll deal with it at a later date when I have the money to ship them properly.
Well, best of luck and hang in there.
Thanks a lot, Bobby.
All right, take care, Joe.
Bye bye.
Our good friend Joe Vecchio of Cup of Joe fame. And, of course, his website, cupofjoe.blogspot.com. Run on by. He's a darn good blogger, and it's a pretty good radio show, too. 8 o'clock Eastern Time every Saturday night. And I know no different. I assume it will be 8 o'clock Eastern Time, even when he moves to Central Time in the Windy City. Still 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Well, an hour has gone by. A very enjoyable conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Coming up, we've got the news, then more of your phone calls out of the break. This is the Head On Radio Network. Me? Well, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it's Friday. That way, he said, not
binding resolution followed heated partisan debate. The Senate rejected a similar measure yesterday. At the White House, President Bush signed the $94.5 billion emergency spending bill. The majority of the money will fund U.S. war efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. A U.S. soldier was killed and two are missing following an attack at a checkpoint southwest of Baghdad today. At least 13 worshippers were killed earlier by a suicide shoe bomber inside a Shia mosque. A report released by the Pentagon today says U.S. Special Forces gave Iraqi prisoners only bread and water for more than 2 weeks and used inappropriate interrogation practices against others. The federal report calls such incidents wrong but not illegal. In Washington, the investigation into whether U.S. Marines killed Iraqi civilians in Haditha last November has been completed. There is also a second investigation underway to decide whether criminal charges should be filed. A Washington, D.C. grand jury today agreed not to indict Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. She was accused of assaulting a Capitol policeman in an altercation earlier this year. The Homeland Security Department warns that most U.S. cities and states are still unprepared for catastrophes, be they natural or man-made. The agency reports across the country local plans for disasters are out of date and uncoordinated. Avian flu has been found in the eastern Canadian province of Prince Edward Island. The diseased gosling was found in a small poultry flock in a residential backyard. Authorities are investigating. Maine announced today it was beginning to test migratory birds for the avian flu. Maine's plan is modeled on the one in Alaska, where it's believed the first U.S. case will be found. Wildfires are burning in Colorado, Texas, Arizona, and Alaska. In New Mexico, thousands of people have been evacuated in front of a fire in the Gila National Forest. Started by a lightning strike, more than 7,000 acres have been scorched. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Japan today unexpectedly lost two key votes before the International Whaling Commission. Japan says it will consider quitting the International Regulatory Group if commercial whaling in the Pacific is not resumed. Whole Foods says it will stop selling live lobsters at its chain stores. The decision follows a seven-month company study on the humane treatment of the crustaceans. Apple Computers investigating allegations regarding poor working conditions in its Chinese iPod manufacturing plant. A British newspaper alleges Apple's factory workers there make as little as $50 a month for 15-hour-a-day working conditions. The Chinese government is trying to slow down a bustling investment boom there. It's ordered Chinese banks to increase reserves. The announcement today led to a stumble in the currencies of Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Japan. Delta Airlines wants to opt out of its pension plan for its pilots. The bankrupt airline says its near-term cost for retiring pilots exceeds $1 billion. Light sweet crude ended trading at $69.88 a barrel today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 1 point at 11,015. The NASDAQ was down 14 at 2130. The S&P 500 was down 5 points at 1252. More at QualitiesNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
We're doing Agnes Free Radio tonight. I miss her. God knows, I miss her. Big difference when you just get to sit there and run your yap. Because running, yes, I like to run my yap. She'll be back Monday evening. I know how it is with the Agnes fan club. There's weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth out there. But don't sweat it. She'll be back. It'll be okay. Let's go straight to the phones. Andy's been waiting. Our Friday call, or early Saturday by this time, I guess, in the UK. Andy, welcome to the program. Good to talk to you, man.
Hey, how's it going? You all right?
Going well. How about yourself?
Well, physically, I'm actually pretty healthy at the moment, so that's pretty good. But I've had some pretty bad news delivered via the BBC today.
What's that?
It's always unpleasant. Well, it ties into a very hot topic, homosexuality and hatred. Basically, a friend of mine I used to work with at a bar, he was one of my managers, sort of supervisors, moved to London because he had a better job there with the bar firm he was working for, one of these chain pubs. And the day before my birthday last year, he was beaten to death on Clapham Common by two skinheads.
Oh, Jesus.
A gay man. And he was just walking home from work, and they, according to witnesses, they were jumping on him and attacking him as if they were trying to kill some sort of animal. And it was brought to my attention today because it was on the national news, and, I mean, the only reason it was on the national news is because the judge handed down record sentences for it, which was 28 years each, minimum, no parole, no get out of jail for good behaviour. But, it's always somebody who utterly doesn't deserve it, somebody who's generally nice and kind. And, I mean, speaking from experience, the guy was wonderful, you know. I mean, I knew he was gay. He didn't know he was gay possibly then, or at least he hadn't come out, but I knew he was. It was quite obvious.
Yeah.
But he was one of the nicest people I've ever met, you know. He'd do anything for anyone. If there was any hassle anywhere, he was always trying to stop people and calm things down. And it's just sad, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And the thing is, I don't know, you know, the these weirdos, Andy, who support, you know, defense of marriage amendments and all of that stupid garbage. I don't know if they understand. Some of them, I'm sure, do. I'm sure that some of them fully intend the effect that they get. But I wonder if some of these people understand that when they vote for things like the protection of marriage, or marriage bigotry is what I think of it as, do they understand that they are thereby enabling the people who want to go out and crucify kids on barbed wire fences and beat people to death on a common? Do they get that, Andy? Or is it, I mean, I don't know.
No, they don't. I mean, the fact is that the sort of people that blindly follow along with their preacher when he says you should support real marriage by opposing them homosexuals, those people don't give a second thought to pretty much everything they do, you know? I mean, look, think back to when you're a child and your mum smacked you because she didn't have time to explain. You were putting your hand on something hot, or you were reaching for the kettle or whatever, and she just slaps you across the back of the wrist or whatever. Not too hard, but hard enough that you go, ow, and move away from the danger.
Right.
Now, after that, most mothers of a normal bent will come and explain to their child why they had to slap their hand and sit down and talk the principle of pain through with their children. This sort of thing doesn't happen with these people because it doesn't occur to them. And that is a way of life for them. You know, nothing exists past the moment. And they're locked utterly into this, you know, God will take care of it all, just do whatever the hell you want. And be whatever the hell you want, and it doesn't matter because you can just say sorry at the end and it's all okay. You know?
Yeah.
And they're sick, and they're filthy, and there's people who are even worse than them, because there's people who know full well what will happen, and on a personal level, they don't want anyone to die, possibly, but they simply don't care enough, because they can use these fascist fanatics. And it doesn't matter whether they're Christo-fascist or Aryan Christo-fascist or that wonderful right word, Islamo-fascist. It doesn't matter what sort of fascist they are. They're all fascists and they're fanatics and they can be used by people in power. And Remember, Hitler was used to intimidate the enemies of the previous chancellor, and he turned and bit him on the hand. Well, didn't bite him on the hand, ripped his head off and took his position. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's happening in American politics now? They're using the fascist element, and the fascist element are now starting to get a bit, well, hang on, they're not doing everything we want here, so why should we? And if you're not careful, there will be, very much like that new computer game, Christians and non-Christians and liberals and conservatives killing each other on the streets of America.
Well, there is an we must bear in mind, Andy, that there is an element in this country that yearns for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were very big in the 90s, but don't think they're not so big now. I mean, you know why they're not so big now? Were there loads of arrests? No. Why aren't they big now? Because George Bush doesn't want to look for them, because they're on his side.
Well, exactly. I mean, there's a reason that the next Timothy McVeigh hasn't done anything or hasn't been caught. Well, wait, they have caught some right wingers, but the stories just quietly disappear.
Yeah.
There's no reason for the right wing monsters, the McVeighs out there, to do anything right now because they've got their guy in charge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anyone who thinks Timothy McVeigh did that with just him and his chum, come off it. Come on, let's be realistic here. If Timothy McVeigh and his pal had decided to go and blow anywhere up, I think they'd have chased a better target than a federal building in Oklahoma. That was purposely targeted, just like the 9/11 attacks were. It was all orchestrated. But at the time, it was orchestrated by a minority in elements of power, and probably the NSA and groups like that.
Well, and look at the string of events that has put in place. Your freedoms in the United Kingdom have been significantly curtailed. I reported last night on the court case that arose out of Brooklyn, where a federal district judge held that the government may detain people who are so-called non-citizens without any access to constitutional protections for as long as they wish.
Oh, yeah, and the worst thing about that is that, say I was living in France and the American government decided they didn't like these phone calls and they were going to have me, then I could go kiss Jack's ass, basically, because they're not having me. But since I'm in Britain, there's barely even a court case about it. We don't even have an extradition treaty with you anymore. We have a you ask, you get treaty.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me sick.
Well, but the thing is, now with our extraordinary renditions, it doesn't matter what country you're in, Andy, they will come and kidnap you, and, you know, that's just the last that's heard of you until, oh, look, he's in Guantanamo.
Mm-hmm. Well, people who know people already know that if I disappear that the Americans have got me, and the Foreign Office will kick up a stink about me, at least, because I'm white, middle class, and my dad worked for them, and so did I.
Yeah. Well, you're lucky in that regard, Andy. I hate to engage in what some would call paranoid fantasies.
It's
but when
paranoid.
It's not anymore. It's
paranoid,
not.
Right? Bob, even if it is paranoid, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't after you. People are paranoid for a very good reason. And our entire, this is why people are paranoid. This is why.
Well, paranoia is the irrational fear that someone's out to get you.
It's no longer irrational.
And that's the point. I don't see being irrational. Look, there was another court case. I'm trying to think offhand, New Jersey. It was filed in New Jersey. The Attorney General of New Jersey and several other attorneys general had sued the telephone companies to find out how many people are being spied on by them.
Right.
The federal government today sued the attorneys general to stop their lawsuit.
Yep. And all you can hope is that the attorneys general throughout various states will keep fighting. And, I mean, ultimately, given your odd distribution of power, that they've actually got a fairly good chance, a better chance than, say, another politician trying to do anything at the moment.
Yeah.
But it comes down to judges again, doesn't it? And obviously, if it ends up going to the Supreme Court, which we can only hope it won't, then it's a foregone conclusion because your Supreme Court is stacked. We're in a ridiculous situation. We're arguing over the America's sort of fate in the immediate term. And in the meanwhile, China's building 27 Aegis cruisers a year, officially.
Yeah.
China's already got AWACS, Advanced Warfare and Control, I believe it's called, or something like that.
Right, and they got a big chunk of that early in the Bush presidency.
Yeah, well, you know how it did it, don't you? He did it through Israel. They flew a Russian Ilyanov 76 to Israel, had it fitted up with the off-the-shelf components and a few special bits, and flew it back to China. The only reason anybody found out is because one of the three crashed, and that was 4 years ago. So the other two didn't crash.
Well, not just that, but do you remember the spy plane incident early in the Bush presidency?
The one that was supposed to ditch in the sea and break up and sink, and instead landed intact. Yeah, that was a wonderful one, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that was where we first got a real good idea that our little Texas cowboy was more like the Sarsaparilla Kid.
Well, look, I mean, let's not... We keep jumping between things. George Bush is a monkey, and he's... Well, let's go back. George Bush is a puppet. It's slightly less offensive, I guess. He's a puppet, and he's always been a puppet. You know, the guys pulling the strings behind him, the guys that were bought and paid for by the Chinese government, you know, the guys that have got millions out of China's workers through the Chinese government just handing it over, they're the ones that fiddled the GPS, so the plane was a few degrees off course, so it was a few hundred miles off course, so it was in Chinese territory. They're the ones that organized the Oklahoma bombing. They're the ones that organized the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. They're the ones that, way back when, financed the Taliban against Russia. You know, these groups of people... are
same thugs, different crimes.
Well, yeah, that's it, you know. They're literally at war with us. And the worst thing is most people can't even see it. You know?
Well, right, because you know, I have a great, you know, Andy, I have a great respect for working people.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's noble.
Absolutely.
And American people are worked to the point now. Look, the people that listen to this program and send me stories and send me articles and call the program are very, very well informed people. And you ask any one of them and you will find out that straight away that being that informed takes work.
Yeah.
It takes effort. You know, I can't tell you the last time I sat down and watched a sitcom.
No, I know.
My world does not have time for that kind of thing. But you know, but if somebody is out there, changing tires and balancing tires and aligning front ends and getting working their ass off all day long. On the one hand, Andy, I can't get too upset with them if they don't want to come home and spend 4 hours. Trying to keep up with the world and find out what a screwing they're taking.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the problem, because, I mean, how can you ask people to you know, throw everything away on the hope that things will get better? You can't. I mean, what we can basically do is we can try and change the system that they've given us, which is hard, but it's doable because it's not utterly corrupt yet. Our systems are both based on Anglo-Saxon premises, so there's some good in there somewhere.
Yeah, yesterday was the anniversary of the Magna Carta, was it not?
Yeah. Didn't get anything over here.
Kind of get all wistful about that, don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would do if anybody here knew about it. I mean, literally, you know, go and find a selection of people aged between 16 and 35 and ask how many of them, like, get 100 of them and ask them what's the Magna Carta, and I reckon you'll get about 10, maybe.
Well, yeah, it's a shop where they sell jewelry, I think.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is the sad thing. You know, over here, our education system is probably better than yours. I mean, I don't say that in a kind of ha-ha-ha way, but it seems a little more structured than yours. Yours seems to be a bit kind of all over the place. People seem to go up and down years all the time. But our education system, we cover a bit of the Henrys, a bit of the Hundred Years' War,
mm-hmm.
and the two world wars, and that's it.
Yeah, once more unto the breach, dear friends. Next up, First World War.
Yeah, well, you know, nothing about empire, nothing about the making or the breaking of our empire, nothing about the post-World War situation. Do you know what we learn in geography when I was in geography? This was 10 years ago.
What's that?
I mean, what do you think you're going to learn in geography? Where stuff is, how rivers, you know, create the courses they create?
Yeah, silly me, yeah.
Yeah, well, no. I spent an entire 2 years of my GCSEs learning about tourism in Tunisia.
Huh?
Yeah.
Tunisian tourism.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, there's about three resorts in the whole of Tunisia. So it wasn't even very difficult.
Man, that's some depth.
Yeah. And
here's the swimming pool.
Well, I can still remember, and it was 10 years ago. But, you know, I mean, just the utter banality of our education system, it's all a setup. I mean, the way your system's so chaotic, it's all a setup. It's designed to keep our people just about as well educated as they can do their jobs, but not so well educated they've got time to think. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key. And that's why it leads into the other points. That's why these Republicans hate the Hollywood liberals that they target, because those people are supposed to be on the Republican side. They're rich and they've got time. They're not supposed to be with the proles. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I mean, you know, we look at these people and some of us think, ooh, they're rich and famous. Some of us think, ooh, they're horrible fascist capitalists. Some of us are in between. And they look at us with a uniform loathing, the ones that think about us at all. You know, I mean, their offspring pretty much don't engage their brains. But Dick Cheney, when he looks over a crowd of people, what does he see? Does he see people or does he see profit?
Oh, he sees the potential to make money.
Absolutely. And, I mean, loops me back to my first point of discrimination. And I dislike discrimination. I don't like to discriminate against anybody. But if somebody sets out to discriminate against me, by God, I'll discriminate against them back.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a religious person.
No, but, I go back and forth on that, Andy. I routinely discriminate against Republicans every chance I get when I go to the voting booth.
Yeah, but it's arguable that Republicans set out to discriminate against us first. I mean, we're liberals. We don't pick our enemies. We let them pick up themselves, and then we defeat them slowly if necessary. But
yeah, Robert Frost once wrote, "I'm so liberal, I won't take my own side in a fight."
Well, I'm not quite that liberal.
I'm not that. No, I'm a long way from that. My kumbaya factor stops somewhere considerably short of that.
Yeah. Well, I ran out of that a long time ago. I think I've got very little time left for anyone who's overtly fascist and corporatist. I really can't cope with people who talk about the consumer on TV, the talking heads that we get on BBC. They're not as bad as your talking heads over there, but they're still just, you know, absolute idiots. Like, who is this person? What are they talking about? Why did you put them in front of a camera? Sort of talking heads, do you know what I mean? And
oh, yeah.
The consumer wants, the consumer needs. I mean, hydrogenated fats are in the news here. Trans fat,
mm-hmm.
You know, all that nonsense. And we don't have anywhere near as bad a problem as you guys do with them. And I believe there's several lawsuits going ahead in the U.S. right now about it. And the companies are all having to change their policies and stop using them.
You know, all those things, they're awful. I was talking about my can of turnip greens the other day, last week. And, you know, God almighty. And I'm a label reader.
Yeah.
And I will put it, that was a moment of blind trust. And I picked it up and put it in the buggy. But generally, if I see that kind of garbage on a label, I put it back.
Yeah. It's just, you know, the insanity of the arguments they use, though. Because, I mean, you get these idiots talking about, oh, it's consumer choice, consumers want. No, consumers don't have any choice at all. There's no such thing as a consumer. What there is there's people, and people have given essentially what they get. Now, you dress it up in lots of different colors, and you have a few different brands, which are probably all owned by one or two companies anyway. And these different colours apparently signify differences between things, but very often they don't. I mean, they all use the same recipes. They just, you know, add a little bit more salt or a little bit more ketchup or something, you know? And they fill it full of this rubbish that they know is bad for us. They know it's we've never eaten this stuff.
I've been trying for several weeks now, Andy, to get Michael Pollan on the show, the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Because he lays all of that stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, my can of turnip greens had wheat gluten, soy flour, and high fructose corn syrup in it.
Yeah, high fructose syrup. That's in everything.
Well, what it's turning out is that high fructose corn syrup may be part and parcel of the explosion in diabetes in this country.
No, it is. I mean, I'm not a diabetes expert, but I know enough about body chemistry to understand that if you shove a whole load of sugar into it, do you know what happens? Diabetes.
Yeah, because you work your pancreas to death.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, there's kids over here who drink liters and liters of these cheap fizzy pop things. And you know, like cheap sodas. And Kool-Aid sort of stuff, I guess, but, you know, it comes in a horrible lime green color and pre-fizz. And they drink this, and literally these kids, 15, 16 years old, they're skinny as a rake, they're pasty white because they've got no nutrients in them at all, and they're going diabetic at 15.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole new form of diabetes, just pure sugar diabetes. Previously, it's been generally overeating, and you take too much sugar like that, and it gives you diabetes.
Yeah.
We're literally changing the human race for the sake of profit. And I don't even want to get onto the GM nonsense that's being forced into you guys, because it's just sick.
No, bovine, anybody who hasn't done it, and just Google up bovine growth hormone.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I've been in organic milk for like 3-4 years now, and to be honest, we've never really had that hormone problem over here. But you guys,
Well, like all the soy stuff, Andy.
Oh, well, soy, soy is disgustingly bad for the environment, so all my vegetarian friends get the lecture. There's more forest chopped down to plant soybeans than there is to feed cows. And once you've fed cows in an area...
Well, and as guys, the phytoestrogens that are native to soy,
yeah,
a little bit scary.
Yeah, well, it's doing things to the fish already, you know?
Yeah.
We're not quite like fish. We won't do the whole just instant transformation during one life cycle. It's spread out over time with us. I mean, you know, people who talk about animal testing being rubbish, they're full of it. I mean, you know, if you want to know if your environment's poisoned, look for small animals dying and getting ill. And
the amphibians.
Yeah, if the amphibians and the fish are changing sex, then we need to worry. We need to worry. And this is the problem. There are so many things to worry about. So many.
Yeah, so you know, you've come home from your job pushing buttons or changing tires or so, yeah, whatever jobs are left to be done in the United States, and you know, I can't blame people for not wanting to sit down and ponder this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to, like, if you love your kids or you love the wife or whatever, you kind of have to.
Yeah, well, that's what the enemy's counts on. And that's why we need to, you Americans, this is onto my political advice now, and then I'll let you get on with your show. You Americans need to stop looking, like Joe said, stop looking at 2006 and 2008. You know what? It doesn't matter who the president is if the democratic message goes through the schools. So get people onto school boards, get people onto district councils, get people onto the rubbish collection system and change it to green recycling. Get people into your energy areas of civil governance and start changing things on a local level. Pass laws. The power companies have to buy solar energy back off the user. In Germany, they have to buy solar energy off the user if he's got spare energy, and they have to buy it at 8 times market rate.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and so do you know what it means? If you buy a standard array for, say, 10,000 euros or so it costs over there, so about £8,000 or something here, they'll give you a mortgage for that, and the mortgage is set up in such a way that it's calculated so the energy you save and sell will pay off the entire mortgage, so you pay nothing.
So you set up a little mortgage trust account or something, and
yeah, the government in Germany is doing it on a local level, at state levels, and they literally they have a mortgage, a bank that's like, you know.
Oh my God, the big coal barons here in West Virginia would just they would have collective hemorrhages at the very thought of it, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, imagine what Nevada could do. Nevada could suddenly stop being a gambling state and start being a power production state.
New Mexico, Arizona, West Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Texas, California. I mean, you know, how many miles of, I think it's around 500 square miles of rooftop New York has?
Mm-hmm.
And that's not counting all the windows that you could put just a sort of simple thin strip of film over that generates a small amount of current. It's like a new solar cell. You can put it over windows. It acts as a tintigator.
Yeah, and see the thing with that, Andy, it's
all doable.
It's doable. It's not that complex.
No. The technology's here. It's absolutely available. And there will
come a day when it will be done, Andy, or there will be no us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you know, I tried to start a business over here, selling and then ultimately producing solar panels. But I couldn't get any funding for it at all off any of the development agencies. Because they'd let me start up a hairdresser's.
You want
a energy company? Forget it.
Well, you know, the same thing's going on in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, with the windmill farm that I've talked about from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
The coal industry is doing everything it possibly can to stop that from happening. And so that they can continue to blow our mountains up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it, you know, that's what I mean. You need to get on, you need to get people into the local planning boards. You need to get people into the
right
area council.
Work the ground level.
And that's it. I mean, you know, once you have control of the state by the bottom end, by the short and curlies, then it doesn't matter what the guy at the top's doing. And remember, the governors are in charge of the National Guard. Why don't your governors start calling their troops home? You're not at war. There's been no formal declaration of war. The president has no right to those troops. Even I understand that, and I don't know that much about your law.
I think it's there are people out there for whom simplicity is complex, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, they play the game, and they see subtlety and maneuver and everything, and they don't get people like us that say it like it is and call them on their crap.
You know, to the same extent that during the Second World War, there were victory gardens. Eventually, because it will become necessity, there will be victory solar panels.
Yeah, yeah. And it'll be too late when you start that nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, put it this way, right? One of the most conservative climate scientists in the UK, like respected, he advises the government, he says that in 80 years' time, if we haven't seriously changed our ways, and that means evacuating cities like New York and London, in LA, and moving inland and to high ground, if we haven't seriously changed our ways, and if we haven't started reducing the carbon in the atmosphere inside of 80 years, that's it. That's all over. Life has to start again. It's all right, it's got 500,000 million years.
You know, the dinosaurs lasted a lot longer.
Well, yeah, and the dinosaurs didn't even do much. They just wandered around eating stuff.
Got taken out by an asteroid.
You know? And well, this is the thing. I mean, we could be taken out by an asteroid tomorrow on top of all this nonsense. And, you know, we have the technology. We could have been on the moon 20 years ago. We could have been on Mars 10 years ago.
Well, and did you see the details from the lecture by Stephen Hawking?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, now, because we've lost so much time and wasted all that nonsense time in the 80s and the 90s doing nothing, because of that, we're still 20 years away from the moon, a permanent base on the moon. And it makes me sick. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All the chances that have been... I mean, I go back to Archimedes and I start cursing.
That makes for a tough day, Andy.
Well, it does. Because, I mean, you know, all the chances we've had as a species, and then all the chances I should have had as a person, that just haven't been there because of idiot fascists that always look for the profit. You know?
Exactly.
It goes back to Rome. Rome was not a successful empire, no matter what anyone says. Rome was an extortion racket run by a mafia gang. It was not an empire. It's the same as you guys have now.
And it just...
Rome destroyed every flowering civilization around it and stole their wealth and enslaved their people and sold them off, which is what you guys are doing at the moment because of your government. And, you know, Rome went out to fight.
Sorry.
What? Money?
Yeah. You know, we're sorry. We'd like to change it, Andy.
Yeah, I know, but that's what I mean. You need to get started at the bottom up. You can't focus on 2006. You can't focus on 2008. Joe is exactly right.
Be on the city council. Be on the county commission. Be on the sanitary board. Be
everything, everything. Get it loaded. Get everybody you know who's interested in politics and start working at it. Get people who have got pretty faces so cameras will look at them. We've got to play their game until we've got control.
And then we've got a lot of work to do.
And then we've got a lot of work to do.
Andy, have a wonderful weekend.
I'll do my best. You too, man. Take care.
Take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend Andy from Wales. There is a lot of work to do. But he's so right. He is so right. I've got a lot of very, very committed friends who work very hard for various issues. A dozen of them have got to stand up and run for office. Because the guys, in many instances, the guys that we're turning to for help aren't helping. They're just not helping. So, you know, it puts us in a bit of a spot. Is it with, like I said, I understand somebody not necessarily wanting to do all of this after coming home from work. But it's a question of do we live in the now? Or do we deal with the future that's happening as we speak? This is Head On. Your phone calls are welcome. Extended conversation before we roll into the weekend. 877, the number 4, Head On. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupoje.blogspot.com. That's cupoje.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
The Head On Radio Network is brought to you every night by the Carpenters and Millwrights. The Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters is a portion of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, or more commonly called the Carpenters Union. The Millwrights are a very specialized craft that perform their work with highly sensitive equipment and perform much of their work on machinery like turbines, laser alignment, and other highly specialized tools. We would like to thank the Carpenters and Millwrights for their support, because freedom of speech is free. And it's brought to you by the Carpenters and Millwrights, working hard every day to provide a brighter future. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
The First Amendment reads, "The people shall not be deprived or abridged of their right to speak."
The odds are the person you just heard is an African American.
Because African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans.
That's twice as likely a stroke could rob you of the freedom to speak your mind.
The freedom to shout from mountaintops.
The freedom to tell your mother you love her.
And it's twice as likely a stroke could take your life.
Therefore, it's twice as crucial for us to do something about preventing a stroke.
Learn how you can help beat the odds.
Start by calling 1-888-4-STROKE or go online to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
A man who has the heart of a conservative, pickled in a jar on his desk. It's Bob Kincaid.
Yes, it is. And this is Head On. Your thoughts always welcome, you know that. Because America needs, well, America needs a good conversation, not a good talking to. That's, you know, that's the difference between a liberal and a right winger. I don't know, for some reason or other, these people on the right wing are so bored and have such petty, pathetic little lives that they feel like they have to mind ours. They want to be in the bedroom. They want to make sure you do with the flag the way they want you to do with the flag. They want to start wars with your kids, but not send their own. And they make me sick. They do. They make me sick. To the phones, again, our good friend Luke has been waiting a while. Welcome, Luke. How's life in Knoxville?
Happy at the end of the week. But
like you were just saying, Democrats talk to people. Republicans talk at people.
Well, precisely.
But the one that got me this week, of our stories, has to be the Plastic Turkey Run 2. You know, it's like you're just sitting there. You just have to wonder if somebody on the plane said, "We got the turkey pack just in case."
Yeah, I know, and I can well imagine the travel package. You'll spend 5 lovely hours at Saddam Hussein's old palace inside the Green Zone in Baghdad.
But don't worry about seeing any other part of Iraq. You're all just going to be in the Green Zone inside Fort Baghdad.
Yeah, well, he wasn't in Iraq. Iraq is a hellish place that exists outside those blast walls where little children get turned into goo and American soldiers get wasted to the tune of 2,500 lives just gone.
But I got 2-3 things here. We'll go through them real quick. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
The one that got to me to start with was, did you hear this thing with John King, where apparently John King was the one who arranged part of the travel for the press? And I'm sitting there going, don't we have somebody in the government we pay to do this? You know, he was, if you listen to him this week when he was talking, it was like he set up part of this. I'm sitting there going, when did you join the White House staff?
Why didn't I wonder if did they take a picture of him with the cute little helmet?
Well, that's the other thing that got to me. Isn't it amazing how you get pictures of everybody? But I still have not seen that picture of President Chucklenuts and his.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious, you know, was there a picture taken and they took it away from you, or did you all just put the camera down whenever he walked in the room or stepped back there? It's like...
Well, it must have been a terrifying occasion because those are not happy faces in that photograph.
Oh, no, the two of them over there look like they're wanting to hang on to the side of the helicopter, inside or outside.
Well, you know, no, image is managed very, very closely by this gang of killers, Luke. I'm sure that there was a thought of there was thought of in advance, and you point a camera at the president, and you are out. You know, it's a long way down from this helicopter.
You know, it's amazing. I remember. You remember when they were told not to do it during the election, and they took that picture of John Kerry down at NASA when he was in the clean room.
Yeah.
And had to be by law, I think, or the rules, whatever you want to say, had to be wearing that clean suit.
Yeah. Now, see, from a campaign standpoint, Luke, I'm thinking, why do you put him in that situation?
Well, the thing of it is, what I understood at that time, they told everybody, do not, you know, this has to be done, but do not take the picture. And, of course, our press decided, no.
Now, yeah, I mean, you know, if you like Dukakis in the tank, you're gonna love John Kerry in the sperm suit.
Oh, I was just sitting there thinking, you know, here we are, Woody Allen. Oh my God.
It was straight out of a Woody Allen movie.
Well, everything you want to know about sex, we're afraid to ask.
Exactly.
God. But the thing that got to me was, like I say, this week I haven't got really into it. I've started the first couple of chapters, but I picked up Eric Boehr's book, Lapdog Press. You know about the Lapdog Press?
Yeah.
That's what they ought to be called from now on, just the Lapdogs.
Well, Joe and I were talking about Bart Kopp a little bit earlier. He has this wonderful photograph that he runs every now and then.
Tutus?
No. This is all the mutt dogs.
Oh.
Gathered around Dear Leader's chair. Like something, I think it's actually out of 1,001 Dalmatians, or 101 Dalmatians. And that's what they are. And they're all labeled ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, CNBC. Sure, they're poodles. Well, no, Tony Blair is the poodle. These are just mutts.
It's one of those things where you're just sitting there looking at them and you're wanting to go ask a question, something that makes sense. Like, you know, Mr. President, you said you were going to fire the person who leaked the name. Well, there he is. Now you can't hide behind an ongoing investigation. Fire him. Or were you lying at the time?
Well, I think we know the answer to that. The Rove thing just... that thing still has holes in it, because Fitzgerald has maintained his silence.
I know. I'm thinking that Carl went in with a proffer and said, I'll do something for you. You know, I'll point at somebody and say, he did it.
Well, it could be something else, too, Luke. And I mentioned this a long time ago when we were playing Perry Mason, legal analyst.
Uh-huh.
the legal theory was put forward, and I really wish Bruce Fine had been. I still can't wait to talk to him. I'm hoping that comes through next week. Do you remember when they advanced the theory that George Bush can declassify anything he wants to at a moment's notice?
Yeah.
And that therefore any leaking wasn't leaking, it was legal?
Yeah.
Well, I am guessing at some point that that Patrick Fitzgerald acceded to that legal theory. You know, it's Richard Nixon on the David Frost show a couple of decades ago saying, "Well, you know, David, if the president does it, it's not illegal."
I just always wondered about that. Does that mean if the president shoots somebody, does that make it legal?
No, it means it's not illegal. There's a difference. The argument, I mean, if you really want to get down to the technical brass tacks of it, is that the president, by this way of thinking, and frankly, it fascinates me to wonder at the mind that comes up with this, that the president is literally immune from all the criminal statutes of any state, territory, county, or federal law. He's immune. He can't be touched. He is above the law. And the case that I brought up last night that I mentioned earlier, this thing in Brooklyn, this case in Brooklyn that says that the president has the broad power under the immigration law to order the detention for an indefinite period of time without access to any constitutional protections of any person who is in this country as anything other than a born or naturalized citizen. That should scare the life out of the citizenry.
Oh, yeah.
Because the next step after that is to declare, look, what's to stop them from declaring retroactively who's a citizen and who's not? It can be done.
Like I say, he can just name you
enemy combatant?
Enemy combatant. You no longer exist. You know what I mean? Your records are purged. You no longer exist as a person.
And that's the thing, Luke. I used to listen to these right-wingers. And they, you know, then during the Clinton administration, my God, the bumper stickers I used to see on old beaten-up pickup trucks, you know, I love my country, but I hate my government, or I fear my government.
Well, remember, these are the same people that the one that's blown my mind over the last couple of years was these are the same people. If you had said we're going to have a national ID card, would have absolutely thrown a fit.
Oh, the NRA would have been in. Would have had every pot-bellied, pasty-faced, doughy, mid-50s old white dude in America in the streets in front of the White House saying, "Oh yeah, he just hates the Constitution." But you know, they'll go along with this.
It's like I say, it just left. Alan Dershowitz always calls it the argument of the left foot. You know, it said if you think something's right, now turn it around the other way, see if they still argue it.
Yeah. Well, this is we're there now. We're there now. The Supreme Court has declared that cops can knock down the door and that it opens an entire Pandora's box of Second Amendment issues. I mean, Wayne LaPierre if it wasn't for the fact that it was a Republican doing, that man would not be able to sleep.
I know. I tell you the one person I want him to go after in the Abramoff thing, who I think is the linchpin in the whole thing, which you do not hear his name mentioned, is Mr. Grover Norquist.
Oh, sure.
You know, because he's connected to a lot of this, and you know he was one of the non-government officials who got mentioned. You know. It was him and, at the time, Ralph Reed, you know, because they were going through and they were naming all these government people, and those were the two that were not in government who got mentioned.
Right, in connection with Safavian and Michael Scanlon.
And the whole thing down in Florida and the contract.
There was a murder. There's a murder in all of this stuff.
And that's what I mean. I think that's where, but I think Norquist is one of those people that's sitting right at the center of it, and no one's paying attention to him. And I think he's the one that if you really wanted to squeeze somebody, he's the one you squeeze, because he'll start naming names, pointing out. He'll give you photographs. And it's like, hang on, let's see if I got some tape, you know?
Exactly.
So he's one of them ones, it's like, say, you know, that I think that is virtually totally slid under the radar, because you never hear it mentioned, the fact that he is part of that, one of the targets of that investigation. You know, I mean, that he was named, you know, when they were naming people. But you never hear anybody mention the fact that he's under investigation.
Well, I think this may very quietly bring about, you know, we haven't heard the phrase unitary executive since the Alito hearings. But what we're seeing, Luke, is the actual employment of that theory. The unitary executive theory says that if George Bush decides to out a spy and get an entire network killed, he can do it because he's the president.
That's one thing. I tell you what, more than anything else, I want the House back is because I just would love to see that when they put the head of the CIA up and say, okay, we want to see that report. The one they have to run after they close down an operation.
Yeah.
And I say, we want to now read it. How many people have disappeared that we don't know? How many people that we do know what's happened? You know what I mean? It's like, give me a body count. Because like they said, I think it was Larry Johnson was saying one day on one of the shows, he said, the minute that happened, and they outed Brewster Jennings, said, everybody around the world was going through the Rolodex going, who do we know from Brewster Jennings? Do we know anybody from Brewster Jennings?
Yeah.
And are they still in the country? And it's like, I don't care if you were the doorman. Chances are you've been a guest someplace. You know, you've been renditioned in the country you were in. It's like, him? No, never heard of him. He hasn't been in this country for 5 years. He said they're beating on his cell door.
And how many of those are in the United States?
No telling. You keep on wondering every time they tell us they've let people go down at Guantanamo, even though they still got quite a few, you got to wonder who they've got slated for those empty cells.
Us.
Yeah. It's like I say you just got to wonder after 2006. What the excuse is going to be, where he's going to declare martial law and say forget about elections in 8, it ain't going to happen.
Well, they've already run that balloon up once. It was September, October 2004 when they said, well, of course, you know, if there's a terrorist attack on election day, we won't be able to hold the elections. they hate Luke. You know, sometimes I fear that I'm too flippant about it. These people literally hate everything about the United States. They hate the idea of a free government.
Well, it's like they, you know, they won't say it, but what they want is they want, I guess, it's halfway between an oligarchy and a fascist state. They want the companies running the country and the families running the companies. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
However you want to determine it in that direction. But that's what they want, and they think, you know, people don't need to be involved in that. You know, no, you just sit over at the side. You don't need to have anything to do with this. You just get in the way. So you go over and sit in the corner, you know, we'll talk to you and let you know what you need to know when we think you need to know it.
It should get that we should have a case of the national flop sweats.
It's one of those things. It's like, I'll bring up your favorite person. It's like next time Robert Byrd pulls out that little copy of his Constitution and say, what are you getting that out for? That don't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, that was over with your vote based on the letters you got with the the donut stains on it.
It's like say, you know, we really should just send him up pieces of AstroTurf and just say, guess what?
Yeah, exactly.
But you've got it before, you ought to recognize this real quick.
So. Well, I don't know. Is it you know, your own county government has fallen apart?
Oh, they're having fun down here with that. It's like they're all of a sudden they're trying to get you'll love this. They're putting together a commission with 18 members. It has to be nine commissioners and 9 public citizens. 5 of them of the commissioners are going to be 5 of the ones that brought the suit.
Because really?
Will serve. So essentially, 5 people who fought this thing to get it killed are going to be the ones put on the commission to see if they can run it back up in front of the judge again and him say everything's fine now. And it's like, I'm sitting there going, unless the first thing on there says, you know, term limits are in full effect the minute this is passed, the term limits are, you know, the nine commissioners are out of a job.
Yeah, because for people who don't live around Knoxville, it's your municipal charter has been thrown out.
It has been negated. And they're just now all of a sudden they're finding out that, oh, by the way, this will affect your bond rate. This, you know, and a whole bunch of laws you passed in the last dozen years may not actually be valid. Because they're talking like some of these, you know, a whole bunch of the zoning things and all this. It's like, well, you know, you did it under an illegal charter, so it's an illegal law.
It's around fruit of the poison tree.
So it's like, you know, you did this one thing, congratulations, you're now playing dominoes. See where these things fall down and make a big sound. So, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, just, oh, Lordy. It's like usual around here. I tell you what, they'll shoot themselves in the foot just trying to kill the ant on top of their shoe. You know, it's like I say, they'll screw up a good thing just to prove they can do it.
And just, you know, yeah, well, you got to remember for the fun of it too.
Oh, it's like I say, it's sometimes with them, it's like you just want to think, if you all ever thought of it, just sit down and talk this out where this is going. You know, it's like, fine, somebody else, I'll you take a couple of years off and do it again. It's like, oh. But I tell you what, I see it's coming up on top of the hour.
Yeah.
Let me let you go.
All right. Thanks, Luke. I enjoyed the conversation. You have a wonderful weekend now, all right?
Bye, bud.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend Luke in Knoxville, Tennessee. If you bother, you know, if you bother to look, there is crap falling apart all over this country. Knoxville, Tennessee? 12 years worth of law? It was a fascinating story. It's kind of convoluted and legal and stuff. But, yeah, their charter was declared illegal. You know, what's going on where you are? Because if you watch closely, you'll find out that the governmental structures in this country are in desperate straits because they've been neglected to death because there are people in power who do not like the structures, who do not, from the Constitution down. We're talking about building change from the ground up, but from the Constitution down, there are people in power who hate most everything that it stands for. Civil rights? Well, thank God for corporate personhood. Because that's all it's good for. You don't have a civil right to sit in your home and expect the police to knock on your door before they come through it. I mean, is this sinking in? And that's insulting, and I apologize for that. But I can't, I mean, whether it's the Brooklyn case or the New Jersey case where the government's suing the attorneys general to keep them from suing the... Whatever this filthy snowball is, it's gathering some momentum, and it's going downhill faster and faster, and there's more, you know, and it's gathering more goop. And whether we choose to realize it or not, we're at the bottom of the hill. And it's rolling toward us. And that is the stuff of nightmares. Now, you know your phone calls are welcome. We've got one more hour of tonight's program. Jump in if you want to. 877-4-HEAD-ON. 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
I was walking down the street, concentrating on trucking right. I heard a dark voice beside of me, and I looked round in a state of fright. I saw four faces, one man, a brother from the gutter. They looked me up and down a bit and turned to each other.
Head on.
This is the Quality News Network. A U.S. soldier was killed and two are missing following an attack tonight at a checkpoint southwest of Baghdad. At least 13 worshippers were killed earlier by a suicide shoe bomber inside a Shia mosque. As of today, at least 2,501 U.S. troops have been killed in combat since the U.S. invaded Iraq in 2003. A poll released Friday by CNN says a narrow majority of the country wants a timetable for troops to come home from Iraq. 47% of those polled say the troop withdrawal should begin within a year or less. However, the U.S. House today rejected a timetable to withdraw troops. The vote on the non-binding resolution followed heated partisan debate. The Senate rejected a similar measure yesterday. At the White House, President Bush signed the $94.5 billion emergency spending bill. The majority of the money will fund U.S. war efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan. A report released by the Pentagon this afternoon says U.S. Special Forces gave Iraqi prisoners only bread and water for more than 2 weeks and used harsh, unauthorized interrogation practices against others. The federal report calls such incidents wrong but not illegal. In Washington, the investigation into whether U.S. Marines killed Iraqi civilians in Haditha last November has been completed. There's also a second investigation underway to decide whether criminal charges should be filed. Homeland Security warns most U.S. cities and states are still unprepared for catastrophes, be they natural or man-made. The agency reports across the country local plans for disasters are out of date and uncoordinated. Avian flu has been found in the eastern Canadian province of Prince Edward Island. The diseased gosling was found in a small poultry flock in a residential backyard. Authorities are investigating. Maine announced today it was beginning to test migratory birds for the avian flu. Maine's plan is modeled on the one in Alaska, where it's believed the first U.S. case will be found. Wildfires are burning in Colorado, Texas, Arizona, and Alaska. In New Mexico, thousands of people have been evacuated in front of a fire in the Gila National Forest. Started by a lightning strike, more than 7,000 acres have been scorched. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Ford says it will funnel millions of dollars into three factories in Mexico, the additional investment south of the border, as well as construction of a new plant in an undisclosed location, is billed as part of the automaker's economic turnaround effort. Japan today unexpectedly lost two key votes before the International Whaling Commission. Japan says it will consider quitting the International Regulatory Group if commercial whaling in the Pacific is not resumed. Apple Computer is investigating allegations regarding poor working conditions in its Chinese iPod manufacturing plant. A British newspaper alleges Apple's factory workers there make as little as $50 a month for 15-hour-a-day working conditions. A subsidiary of Schlumberger announced it has been fined nearly $20 million. The subsidiary of the world's largest oil field services company was charged with making out fake visa applications for foreign workers on U.S. ships in the Gulf of Mexico. Light sweet crude ended trading at $69.88 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 1 point at 11,015. The NASDAQ was down 14 at 2130. The S&P 500 was down 5 at 1252. You can find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund. It's 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Gee, I'm sorry about that. Amateur night behind the board, you know. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Rolling down toward my weekend, sort of. All right, just to re-examine, if you will, what it was that we're sort of horrified by tonight. You got the two court cases I talked about last night. One that says anybody not technically a citizen of this country may be indefinitely detained for any reason or no reason. Or, most horrifyingly, just for no other reason than your race. Or your religion. And frankly, is it that much of a stretch to suggest that perhaps for reasons of your lack of religion? Is that a possibility? Sure it is. So there's that. There's the cops, the police battering down the door ruling yesterday, the Hudson case. And the case from a couple of days ago where the attorneys general are being sued by the government to stop them, the attorneys general, from finding out from the phone companies just exactly what it is that the phone companies were turning over about you and me to the federal government. One more, and then we will go back to the phones. From the Associated Press, the text, the bare text, the CIA, oh, this is going to be good. The CIA has adopted internal rules allowing it to define. And this one kind of chills me a little bit. You've heard about the chilling effect? This is the chilling effect. The CIA has adopted internal rules allowing it to define what constitutes a news organization and what doesn't. The National Security Archive filed a lawsuit Wednesday. And it says the CIA has begun charging illegal search and duplication fees under the Federal Freedom of Information Act. Because the law, the Freedom of Information Act, says if it's public interest or contributes to public understanding of government, the act means that it says that government agencies have to waive fees. And of course, you know, you go FOIAing the federal government, you can be into a couple of $100,000 worth of copying fees before you know what hit you. The CIA will decide whether you're a legitimate news organization. Are we legitimate? Well, we don't have a big fancy office in Washington, D.C. or New York or L.A. or Chicago. But we have an interest in the truth, we have an interest in the facts, and we have an interest in sharing that. The CIA rejected immediate waivers for 42 FOIA requests over the last year from the National Security Archive. These were issues like assistance to Afghan rebels after the 1976 invasion of the Soviet Union and CIA daily briefings for the Truman White House, okay? They said many of the requests wouldn't interest the general public. The CIA has now decided it will be the arbiter of what you find interesting. I find that interesting, don't you? Let's do go back to the phones before I yammer on. Welcome to the program. Who have I got?
This is Steve Nicholas.
Hey, Steve. How you doing? Our good friend Steve Nicholas from Jackson County, West Virginia.
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. You know, for a Friday. What's going on with your campaign these days?
On Sunday, I'll be having a fundraiser at the Jackson County Fairgrounds at the McDonald Building in Cottageville, which that's about 6 miles west of Ripley.
Know it well.
And the guest speaker will be Delegate Joe DeLong from Hancock County.
Oh, good deal. Well, how's the campaign shaping up, Steve?
Things have been kind of slow for a while because I've had class and stuff in Philadelphia, but it's steaming along slowly but surely. Found a few more volunteers. I found another volunteer yesterday, so that's something.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hit the trail again tomorrow, and hopefully after that, I'm going to try to hit Ravenswood next week. So trying to get the strongholds first and then go out into the territory and start to chip away at the incumbents.
Has the incumbent said anything? Has he acknowledged your existence yet or anything at all?
Very, very subtly, because on the day of the primary, he ran in his ad. He specifically mentioned he was 46 years old and he was a lifelong resident of Jackson County. And I don't know why he would bring that up against a 50-something opponent who's also a lifelong resident of Jackson County. So I'm sure that was directed against his 26-year-old opponent.
Yeah, most likely. Most likely. So I noticed you've added some stuff to the website. Tell us a little bit about that, please.
The donation page is up now. There might be a little bit of problems at the beginning because we're testing it with the contributions, but that's up now, so you should be able to make contributions. And I've added a couple of position statements, one on healthcare, one on energy and environment, and a couple of essays, one on liberalism, and another one on principle.
And just so folks, well, I'm sure people will go and have a look, but the website address again, please?
geocities.com/Steve4WV.
geocities.com/Steve4WV. Run on by, have a look. Steve is a darn fine writer. Position statements on health care. What are you trying to get out there to voters about the health care issue?
Well, according to the latest numbers, there are an estimated 294,000 West Virginians. That's almost one in six of us who don't have it. I mean, there's no reason for that. So what I'm going to do is propose a single-payer system that is paid for by a combination of, this is going to get a little bit technical, but what they call the externalities. In other words, try to figure out how much this costs society in terms of its health care for tobacco and alcohol. And so in other words, if a pack of cigarettes, I'm just throwing out numbers here, I'm not saying that's going to be the actual number. Could be more, could be less, it could be right on, but I'm just doing this for the sake of clarity here. But if they say that after doing the research, the economists say that a pack of cigarettes costs a quarter in health care costs, then we'll have a quarter added to the cost of a pack of cigarettes and use that to offset the cost of the tobacco, and the same thing for alcohol, and whatever we need after that in a payroll tax, and then use that to basically expand Medicare to the whole state.
Well, it would certainly, that's something that is very badly needed. What about a lot of our healthcare our health woes in this state, Steve, are derived as a direct and proximate result of coal. Where does big coal play in the healthcare crisis here?
Well, I mean, for one, because one thing I think I remember I received a questionnaire asking if the state should use its money to clean up after pollutants, basically. And, well, I think we should have something like a Superfund, like the federal level at least did have until a few years ago, until Bush and Company defunded it, and basically make the polluters clean up the air. As I remember reading, when I was up at WVU, they did a test, and they said that parts of Mon County had higher pollution levels than L.A. County, and there's no reason for that.
No. But, you know, you could probably find that same statistic in Mingo or Logan, possibly. Not a lot, you know, not a lot of coal over there in Jackson County. God knows, you're downriver from Parkersburg, and given, you know, and I guess that's sort of the overall nature of my question, Steve. When big business interests, corporate interests, poison and pollute our citizenry, what is the proper response of government to that?
Well, the proper response is try to get them to stop. And failing that, we got to make them pay. Hit them where it hurts, because the Ford versus Dodge case in 1919 said that the only obligation of a corporation was to its shareholders. Well, if we start to make it reflect in the cost, then the corporations are going to have to clean up, because they'll realize it's in their best interest.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Are you familiar with this Greenbrier Wind Farm thing going on? I realize it's not a Jackson County issue, but have you followed this any at all?
Well, if the people of Greenbrier County don't want to let Jackson County do it, we could use the job.
That's the truth.
And this moratorium, I was stunned when I was driving to work the other day and read and heard that they were trying to have a moratorium on that. I mean, we need to be building wind farms and tidal energy and I think those are the two best for renewable resources here in West Virginia. I don't know if we necessarily have enough sunny days for solar power, but we've got to get onto the renewable. If we don't do that, then we're going to get left behind again. And the movie Matewan was on IFC last week, and I mean, that goes to show you what happens when an out-of-state interest dominates the state too much. And my opponent, his biggest contributor thus far is Don Blankenship. He gave the max after the primary.
Yeah.
So instead of what the people need to do, if they see anybody who deals with the Don Blankenships of the world in such a casual and cordial way, it's time to say, you don't represent me anymore.
Well, it would kind of seem like he represents Don Blankenship, wouldn't it?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I remember I was watching this documentary on Don Blankenship, and Carmichael, who I'm running against, the only legislator who was willing to say anything on camera nice about Blankenship. I mean, I'm sure he's not the only one, but if somebody says it's great to the question of how they feel about all the money that Don Blankenship's pouring into the politics of this state, I mean, that goes to show you how much they care about the people of this state. Because the minimum wage bill, Carmichael voted against it, and the health care bill, it wasn't perfect, but it was a step in the right direction. And he's the one who put the motion on the floor that killed that bill. I mean, if there's any question about whether Jackson County needs new representation, to me, those two, that answers the question then and there.
Well, how, are you in a position to begin calling him out, or are you kind of going to let things lay fallow until Labor Day? What are your campaign strategies right now?
Right now, I'm just trying to sneak a little bit under the radar. Obviously, I'm doing the fundraisers. I'm going to be marching through the parade and basically doing a few things to get myself out there to the people. But with money issue, I've pretty much got to wait till close to the end anyway. But I've been out there and I've been talking to people, and that's the main thing right now. Do that. Hopefully the money will start to follow soon. And then when the time comes, then I can be ready to hit the ground running as far as the media goes.
Well, right now, you do have big doings over in Ripley for the 4th of July. At least you don't have to put up with Dear Leader showing up this time through. He ruined you guys 4th of July a couple of years ago. I remember that very well. God, I hope he doesn't come back to West Virginia. He's been here for two different 4th of Julys, and it's just embarrassing.
Yeah, I remember he came to Morgantown last year, and I was wanting to make the trip up, but one of these things that sometimes you can make it and sometimes you can't.
Well, yeah.
He's not going to, if he comes to Ripley again, I guarantee that I'll be doing what I can. If nobody else is willing to lead the charge, I'll lead it.
Yeah, he'll be in the free speech zone somewhere around, I don't know, Weirton. I hate that stuff, Steve. I really do. Let's remind folks a little bit. You're 26, so some might say, well, yeah, it's kind of young to be in the legislature, but you've packed a lot in your 26 years, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm a college graduate, war veteran, not a combat veteran, but I was overseas and seen quite a bit of things in my 26 years. And if somebody wants to say 26 is too young, Nick Rahal was 27 when he first got elected to Congress.
Well, that's true, too.
That's how old I'll be when the general election rolls around. Robert C. Byrd was 29 when he first got elected to the state legislature. Heck, for that matter, Einstein won the Nobel Prize for Physics for discovering relativity at the age of 26. And if he can discover relativity, surely I can beat Mitch Carmichael.
That's the right attitude, Steve. That is definitely the right attitude. Well, now at your website, do you still have you wrote for the Daily Athenaeum, the paper there at West Virginia University, and you wrote some fine stuff and pretty good strong stuff. Do you still have the link to all of that there?
I don't have the link there, but pretty much it usually ran on, if you go through the archives for the 2004-2005 year, from October on, it usually ran on Mondays, and before that it usually ran on Tuesdays. There were a few days where it was a little bit off, but for the most part, you go to the archives on the DA's webpage and then go into the opinion section on the Mondays, usually you'll find my columns there.
Okay. What is that, dailyathenaeum.com or?
www.da.wvu.edu.
Well, it was some very good writing. Steve, so you've got the fundraiser coming up Sunday?
Yeah.
Out at the Jackson County Fairgrounds, Jackson County, West Virginia, Cottageville. What are you looking at in the way of turnout? Looking good so far?
I don't really know how turnout's going to be. It's one of these things of it's going to be a lot of at-the-door stuff. I've been trying to get the word out. I've been advertising the paper, and I've been taught. And when the people really start to express some interest in more of a just a leaning fashion, and that's when I hit them with and I let them know it's going to be the 18th. I've been flyering. So I've been doing what I can to get the message out.
Well, are you getting some help through the local county executive committee structure?
Yeah, the local county, they are providing the food, and they're basically word of mouth, and they help. They've been passing out the flyers. So my goal is, no, the admission is $10, and my goal is to get about 100 or 150 people there. So that'll be $1,000, $1,500, depending on how successful I am.
No, I can buy you some radio time.
Yeah, I'm certainly going to need it because, I mean, I've been looking at the fundraising and all. It's been something like a 4-to-1 ratio so far. And
well, that's, he figures, I'm sure he figures he can bury you with money.
Yeah, I'm not worried so much about being buried for money because over one district over, the House Minority Leader 8 years ago, he failed a 20-something who just knocked on doors, and all of a sudden there was a big shocker come election night, and I'm hoping the same thing is going to happen over here.
Well, I hope it does, and if heart and hard work are any indication, Steve, I think you've got a very good start. Again, geocities.com/Steve, the number 4, WV. Go by, have a look if you can donate and help another Democrat. Carmichael's a fairly influential member of the minority party in the House, is he not?
He's the ranking member of the banking committee.
Yeah, that'd be fun to knock him off. Let's get him out of the House of Delegates. What do you say?
Yeah, influential. I guess it depends on how you define it. He's not been very effective because over the years, he's only had 13 bills, even with his name on it, ever become a law. And I mean, that's a record of well below. I don't know what the math is after this year, but I know that going into this year, he had a rate of like 8% approval. And four of those, at the time, 10 were just line items on a budget bill. So,
yeah,
pretty much he's delegate no.
Yeah, that helps the people, doesn't it? All right, well, Steve, best of luck with the fundraiser. I wish I could get over there at some point. Perhaps I can. Please stay in touch, and again, I hope folks will, and you can be contacted still at Steve the number 4 WV at yahoo.com.
Yeah.
Okay, great, Steve Nicholas. Thank you very kindly, and have yourself a great weekend. All right.
You too.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye now. This is what we're talking about. Especially young people, older people, you know, middle-aged, pudgy, pink people like myself. Well, not me. I'm not running for office. But getting involved in the process, changing things. This young man has a lot of great ideas, and, I have great hopes for his success. We'll be back after the break. More of your phone calls, 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a
white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Apple has issued a response to claims made in the UK paper Mail on Sunday that some of the company's popular iPods are produced by sweatshop labor. The article claims that iPods are made at factories in China for as little as $49 US a month. The report claims to have visited one factory operated by the company Foxconn in Longhao, where they found 200,000 employees who work for 15 hours per day. Apple issued a statement on Wednesday saying the company would be investigating the claims made by the paper. Apple also said the company is committed to a supplier code of conduct, which says suppliers must uphold the human rights of workers.
As Congress prepares to consider a free trade agreement with Colombia, the AFL-CIO's Solidarity Center is out with a new report on the murderous labor abuses rampant in that nation. Bob Perillo of Chicago's U.S. Labor Education in the Americas Project wrote the report.
7 out of 10 trade unionists who are murdered in the world are murdered in Colombia. It's the most outrageous example that exists in the world today.
Perillo says the violence against workers and their unions is done with virtual impunity, and the U.S. Free Trade Agreement does not protect Colombia's workers from this violent abuse.
It's outrageous that the United States would even contemplate the possibility of negotiating a free trade agreement with a country like Colombia, unless and until there is significant progress made on the levels of anti-union violence.
The AFL-CIO believes Colombia should not be rewarded with greater trade with the U.S. in light of these brutal human rights abuses.
There is still a possibility that we can push our congressional representatives to reject this free trade agreement and to call for a cutoff of military aid in the U.S. to Colombia. Those are the two most important things that we can.
Bruce Springsteen, the blue-collar workers musician, received some heat on Wednesday night in Milwaukee for performing at the non-union Bradley Center. Springsteen is on tour performing the songs of Pete Singer, who wrote pro-labor anthems such as If I Had a Hammer and John Henry. More than 20 union members of MASH, a coalition of union musicians and stagehands, protested outside of the concert. The Bradley Center has been the target of union organizing attempts in the past. Here is today's economic report. The economy continues to show signs of slowing down as industrial production fell sharply in May. Output from mines, factories, and utilities dropped by 0.1%, according to numbers released this week by the Federal Reserve. Automobile production was hit hard, dropping in production for the second month in a row. The slowing economy is expected to impact the job market in coming months.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Okay, so sometimes all the buttons don't do what I like for the buttons to do. We'll have to. Okay. Not perfect. I'm sorry. I want to, before we go back to the phones, I've heard it mentioned on our QNN newscast a couple of times. This Delta story, you know, welcome to America, your pension just got robbed. Delta Airlines will file a request Monday. I mean, I read this stuff and I feel like I've been to the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. This is the United States. Remember, it's got the booming economy. I mean, Dear Leader says the economy's booming, right? I mean, it's just huge. It's great. It's wonderful. Delta Airlines Incorporated will file a request Monday to terminate its pilot's pension plan, according to the CEO of Delta. Made that very clear today. They are going to terminate the pilot's pension plan. Delta CEO Gerald Grinstein said Delta will ask that the pilot's pension be terminated effective September 2nd. I'm not putting me nor anybody I love on Delta anytime soon, because I don't want to be, and this is not a slur on the working people, and the pilots work hard. But I don't want to be on an aircraft that's being piloted by a guy who just got robbed. Because now I've been through the article. It's from the Associated Press. And the pilots have already agreed to a $280 million a year wage concession. And I'm reading. Delta has lost more than $14 billion in the last five. Reading. You know, I can't see in here where there's any mention about CEO Gerald Grinstein canceling his pension. Bastards. Terminate its pilot's pension plan. These aren't pilots. These are human beings. And they're pleading with the Senate, Delta is, for pension reform. Oh, hell. It's a Republican Congress, and he's writing to the Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson, who is just almost, he's a senator from Georgia, where Delta is, of course, headquartered. Johnny Isaacson is almost as stupid, almost as useless as my favorite useless idiot senator, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama. That mud-mouthed. The unfortunate. This is Gerald Grinstein in his letter. The unfortunate reality is that even if a pension reform bill containing airline relief passes, unless the pilot plan is terminated, Delta cannot successfully restructure and emerge from bankruptcy. $14 billion daggum dollars they've lost in the last 5 years. Now, I know we've got a short memory, and there's so much crap that rolls downhill every day that we tend to forget. But do you remember what happened after 9/11? Do you remember one of the principal responses of your government, my government, of the people, by the people, and for the people? Pfft, not. Do you remember one of the principal responses to 9/11? I do. Do you remember that we gave away just an absolute horse-gagging, wet elephant-burning amount of taxpayer money to the airlines, and not a damn dime of it went to their employees? I mean, now, the guy who wrote I don't follow his work. I don't think I've ever seen it before. Harry R. Weber, AP business writer. Mr. Weber, buddy, how about you get on the phone and start trying to ask some hard questions like, Mr. Grinstein, have you canceled your pension yet? Let's see here. This is also from his letter. That sense of urgency is shared by Delta employees and their families, who have conveyed their concerns to Congress through almost 56,000 letters, emails, and phone calls since the campaign began. Release the hounds. Excellent. How dare he talk about what their families and employees are worried about and trying to get done until he goes out and puts the solid silver urinal on the auction block, or yeah, whatever kind of gym crack garbage he's got in his house somewhere somewhere off West Paces Ferry in Atlanta. Until that happens, no, Mr. Grinstein, we can do without you talking about the suffering of your workers. The pilots have already given up $280 million in wage concessions per year. Per year. Delta has promised the pilots a $650 million note. Basically, that's a debt claim in the event the pension is terminated. And they're giving them a $2.1 billion unsecured claim. Well, hey! You know what an unsecured claim is. You can pretty much line a birdcage with your unsecured claim. This is not the America that I was given to understand would be my lot as I grew up. This is. You want to get on a plane with a guy who's just been ripped off? Screw it. I got no future. I got no retirement. We're all going down. Bye. But again, no. There's a lot of Delta pilots. Reckon any of them got sick family, sick kids? Well, that'll go out the door too, won't it? Because after all, once you get into bankruptcy court, unless you're a consumer... Once you get into bankruptcy court, human beings are become, you know, you heard earlier the reference to people, I think it was Andy mentioned, people being referred to as consumers as opposed to being referred to as people. Well, you get into bankruptcy court and people are referred to as liabilities. Now, if you're a consumer trying to file bankruptcy, well, that unsecured note, that's like your credit cards. You know, they take the risk. You have given you the card. You do the deal. You know, you go bankrupt. That's an unsecured debt. Well, you know, thanks to a whole bunch of Republican senators and erstwhile Democrats like Joe Biden and Robert Byrd, who voted for that hateful bankruptcy bill. Nope, you can't get rid of that credit card debt anymore. They made it a secured debt. They bowed down and then licked the boots of the credit card industry. This is not the America that I was promised. I was born just a few months before John Kennedy was killed. You ever heard the phrase saying, you were born under a bad sign? That's a bad sign. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Ed is with us. Ed, welcome to the program. Good to talk to you.
Good to be here, Bob. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
I was just listening. I had other things I wanted to say, but it is funny that we, the working people, do not have a way of getting out from under real problems, whether they're health, financially speaking, health problems, people killed in Iraq, where they don't have the money to secure and keep what they've got, or what it is. But these companies, and to my soul, and I dealt in pensions, and that Pension Reinsurance Act of 1964 might as well have been put on toilet paper as far as the worker's concerned. He don't have anything. But the companies can turn right around and not secure what they say in pensions. Pardon me. In other words, why don't they have to put in these pension plans dollar for dollar as time goes to cover these items and these benefits for people instead of the way they accrue the credits or whatever, and then welch on what they said. It's it's a sickening situation, and it's a disgusting if you want to look up on them CEOs and explain it to them.
Well, I guess it would be just improper or unfair or rude to ask Mr. Grinstein whether he's going to lose his pension. That's just not fair, because he's working real hard, Ed. He's working real hard.
And you know something else, Bob? Not only that, if he leaves there, he not only gets his pension, they give him a bonus to keep their mouth shut.
Sure. Oh, he's not going to miss any meals.
Oh, no. But I called to talk about Murph and...
Congressman Murtha?
And his statement today about these weasels like George Bush and his cronies in Congress. The war we are fighting, that's the term one of them used. And, boy, let me tell you, he let him have it. He said, where do you get this we stuff? We're in Congress not doing, basically, I'm paraphrasing, not doing anything but sending these boys over there. So I'm just, and he's, you know, he's not withdrawn his running for the speaker or the president of it or whatever, he's the Congress, if things go right. He said he just had his campaign on hold, and boy, I'm glad to hear that. That is one guy that's got some guts and is straight outspoken.
Yeah, well, did you see what, I hate even mentioning her name, but did you see what Ann Coulter suggested? She called for him to be killed.
You know, that is a real bitch. If there's one that ought to get that coming, it's her. I listened to her the other night making fun of these widows that lost her husbands about that, you know, crying about it, basically. And you talking about a real bitch and is a dollar hungry. That a person that would buy a book from her, they need to use the rest of their money to go to a psychiatrist. But the other thing I was going to say just briefly on Hillary Clinton, you know, I thought a lot about her, and the less I think about her, or the more I think about her, the less I like her. But, you know, the thing that people associate with her is with Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And there is as a difference as day and night in them two.
Oh, yeah.
And Hillary Clinton is nothing but a Democratic splitter. She's a wedge for the Democratic Party. And she will draw, certainly, if she happens to get the nomination. But the word is getting out on her. And she is, like I said, she is just about as bad as old Ann Coulter and old weasel face from up there in Connecticut, Joe Lieberman, and a few others like that. They ought to go ahead and put a description on themselves of what they really are.
Mugwump?
Right on. But that's about all I had to say, Bob. I was just thinking about Murph and what a good guy, and how all of a sudden his name has risen to the top. It's like good milk. Cream of the crop rises.
Well, he's getting under their fingernails when they bring out people like Coulter to call for his assassination.
Yeah. You know what, Bob? That, you know, if she can do them like that, why aren't we allowed to do George Bush that way?
Yeah, don't even think about it. Agent Fred will be on my doorstep within a minute.
Yeah, well, I'm not.
I know.
But why is one damned idiot like her allowed to make statements like that? But if we say anything at all against like that...
No, we're haters. We're haters.
We're haters. We're Bush bashers. We're everything but what she is. And, you know, if they put a damn hummingbird's brain in her head, she'd fly upside down.
God, I love you, Ed. That's beautiful. I'm writing it down.
But I'm going to get off here anyway before I get my blood pressure any higher.
I don't want to do that to you. Ed, you have a wonderful weekend, all right?
I'm sure going to try to, Bob.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for your time.
And yours. Bye now.
Bye.
And onward to the... hey, who have I got?
You've got Richard in Northern California.
Richard, how are you?
I'm good. I have only, we've got only a few minutes, so let me encapsulate what I was going to say. First of all, congratulations on coming home.
Thank you.
And you must be up over your eyeballs in complications with all the changes.
It's taken a little getting used to, but I like to think I'm flexible.
You know, I'm really pleased to hear Agnes's PSA about the union, about the carpenters and millwrights.
Mm-hmm.
Did she write that?
Yes.
Hey, tell her. It's a nice piece of work.
I think, I mean, to be brutally honest, I think she had some help. I think she had some like a flyer or a folder or brochure or something that she picked up some of that language from. But, yeah, that's her work.
Well, it's really nice. I'm really interested in knowing more about what those guys do. So I'm pleased to hear that PSA. And also, I would like you to do a little tiny feature about those people.
You know what? That can happen. That can happen almost instantaneously. That's a great idea. And you know, our friend Wayne, who calls in from time to time.
Yeah.
He is the president of the Carpenters Local. In southern West Virginia.
Right.
Yeah, local 1911.
Okay, great.
And so maybe he can do a little sort of a generalized what we do, why we do it, how we do, that kind of thing.
I'm still not able to get you live through my house. I'm still looking for an affordable FM transmitter to put on the computer. You know, unfortunately, these devices, which are worth every bit of maybe $12, are now repackaged as iPod accessories, and they're selling for $35.
Yeah, brother.
And that's the computer world. But there have been a few things that you've mentioned I wanted to just bring up. One is you spoke about the case about an IBM employee being sacked. I think it was called...
Oh, yeah, I remember that case.
Okay, Alternative Resources was in there. Now, Alternative Resources is a job shop, and I suspect that he's actually an Alternative Resources employee. In other words, what they are is a highfalutin temp agency. And I know this very well because I've worked for this type of outfit for the last maybe 12 years as a technical writer. They take a big hunk of your pay. And they earn a little of that, you know.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to get that in there, that IBM is sort of immune, in a way, from what really probably happened.
Well, they ran right out and said, no, our diversity plan doesn't apply to us.
Well, see, they're the client, so they can sack the guy in a moment's notice. They are not his employer. Alternative Resources is his employer.
Right. That's the problem sometimes with news reporting. You don't necessarily get all of it, and that's what makes this show so much fun. I get to find out the straight skinny, Richard.
Yeah, exactly. Delta Airlines has been anti-labor and anti-union for as long as I can remember.
Yes.
I was a member of SEIU during the 70s, and I think I recall like it was about 1975 or so that Delta sacked all their union janitors. So this stuff goes way back.
Well, I had when I lived in Atlanta, I had friends who, I had a friend whose wife was a flight attendant and a union member.
Okay.
And it was just one struggle after another.
Yeah.
To do their jobs in a safe and reasonable fashion, and Delta opposed them at every turn.
Yeah, I that's the sense I get.
And I couldn't help remembering, Richard, that, you know, we gave billions to the airline industries.
You know, and that is really, that sticks in my craw, because what did Amtrak get out of all this? They got nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, Bush has Norman Mineta going around trying to backstab Amtrak at every possible opportunity. And Amtrak is just continuously strangled by the Republicans.
Well, they hate it.
Huh?
They hate it.
Yeah.
It's a government to them. Amtrak is a government program.
Yeah.
I mean, if Karl Rove had his way, he'd have a picture of a big black Jewish woman getting off an Amtrak train, and I'm not trying to be stereotypical, but you get my meaning.
Yeah, I do. You know, and I'm sitting here. what I'm doing is I was writing a letter. I help steer a health maintenance organization. I've spoken with a couple other people on your network about this. My county, California, actually operates its own HMO, which is really exciting.
That is.
Huh?
That is exciting.
You know, and so I'm a member, and I also am a commissioner. So I help run this thing, and boy, that's cool. So I have been denied services, and I'm writing an appeal.
Oh, no.
So I'm, you know, that's...
You're going to have to sue yourself, Richard?
Yeah.
Well, at least...
I'm not going to have to sue myself, because, you know, this has to go to a medical director, but I'm the guinea pig. I'm the miner's canary in all this. I'm the guy who walks into the swinging door at every possible opportunity.
Well, it's, you know, it's one of those Forrest Gump moments where, you know, at least I ain't led no humdrum life.
Yeah. Listen, I want to talk with you guys about a couple of program ideas and, what do they call that? Tweaks. So how do I get a hold of you?
Email's the easiest. Bob@headonradio.com.
Okay. Do you read it?
It's like religion to me.
Okay. You'll get it.
Okay. Good deal. Well, Richard, have yourself a wonderful weekend. I wish you'd called in earlier. We could have had a lot more fun.
Well, again, we'll do it.
All right. Thanks, Richard.
Bye, Bob.
Take care. Bye. God, I love this. Well, that's it. My lovely wife, Agnes, had the night off. So in her stead, instead of Agnes running the program competently and nicely, I screwed everything up. But I did it with the best of intentions. Brian Reznor announces the program. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, is our chief engineer. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams and the archives and the podcasting of all the programs on the Head On Radio Network, as well as the archives of a number of wonderful, wonderful liberal talk programs. How many gigabillions of information? It's amazing the information that he serves. And he does it without sending a bill or asking you to pay for access. There's a fundraiser going on. He's trying to raise $10,000 to get him through another few months. And, you know, he's a few days in, and he's already up to about, what, $1,500, $1,600 last I checked. You're doing the right thing. If you haven't, please do. Like I said, he's not going to send you a bill. Now, as our good friend Richard mentioned, it's the Carpenters and Millwrights, the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, who make this all go. They get up every day, they go to work, they build the American dream. And by supporting this network, they're trying to do their very best to save the American dream. Did I forget anything? I hope not. Always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.